This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Yeah, Frank here, he's got his own billiard room.
Yes, it's the...
billiard room.
Come on already. We call it the...
The Place to Be.
Yes, the Place to Be. The Place to Be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man Can.
Ugh. Time to play the game!
No, you left me satisfied and smiling.
So. That's what she said!
Why do I want this? I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
Japanese band Oral Vampire produced a song called The Repo Man and used footage.
Oral Vampire, huh?
Or Oral. A-U-R-A-L.
What kind of show is this?
Sounds like some Twilight porn in Michael Vincent's collection there.
Oz went on to star in American Pie, of course, as the lacrosse player. Bismarck. No, wasn't it? Bismarck, wasn't it?
Liz Mark.
No, who's the other guy I'm getting confused with?
Bismarck. Yeah, he dressed as North Dakota.
There's only one place where the big boys play, and that is in my extra queen size bed. Well, it just happens. What can you do?
Let's talk the fix.
I think they might hit a shock wall.
Is that the Shockmaster's wall?
Yeah, I like Big Dick myself. I was just curious. PTB Nation, let me know what you're
doing. Our opener.
To do worse than Josh Richard.
Race tremendous, crime is endless. Same different day, Father forgive us. They know not what they do, all praise is due. I'm big like EZ and Big Bamboo.
What's that? I didn't hear you.
Shut up.
Come on a little louder.
Shut up.
Everybody in the gathering now.
Shut up. Just shut up.
Just
shut up.
What's that? I didn't hear you.
Shut up.
Come on a little louder.
Shut up.
Everybody in the gathering now.
Shut up.
Shut up.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to the great episode of the one and only Place to Be podcast. I'm your co-host, Justin Rosero, coming to you live here on this Monday evening, and we're back at it, back inside the vintage vault. Football's back, the nip is in the air, fall is just about upon us, and I'm going to go ahead and bring in my PIC, the Mike Francesa, here at PlaceToBeNation.com, and that is Scott Criscola. Scott, how you doing?
I don't talk about hockey.
Well, see, I call you Francesa because you recorded your extra point the night of week one of the NFL, and the first hour of the show is like talking, baseball commissioners and Hall of Famers from 70 years ago.
Well, I wanted to make sure when we got to the NFL part of the show that the game that the Bronco game had been going on before we got to.
You
the
might
scores,
as well have so. Just had like the author of some Babe Ruth book on to talk about the book for the first 45 minutes.
I think we'll do that. Well, when we started recording, the game hadn't started yet either.
Well,
so.
Hall of Fame. You had like 15 other games to talk about.
Well, I know.
About,
we got
who's
going to
wear what hat to the Hall of Fame? Come on.
Yeah, it's
Francesa. Well, no. Your Diet Coke and a sweater vest away.
Sweater vest away and talking about horse racing is all.
Yes.
JR, pleasure as always. Welcome, Place to Be Nation, to episode 332 of the Place to Be podcast. And did you have a fine weekend, sir?
Yeah, spent it down at the beach.
Yes, I noticed.
Beach house for the weekend. It was good. It was a nice little break.
Mm. Yes. Yeah, I went to a wedding, which was highly publicized on Facebook. And then yesterday, that was the only time I sang, though, because, like I said, the bride...
Enough.
The bride was Ecuadorian, and the rest of the music I didn't really get. So, spot the highlight of it. It was nice though. The weather's finally changed. Enough of this humidity shit. The entire summer had a chance to be humid, and it had its chance. It passed. So, go away. We don't need it now. There's a nice nip in the air. Yes, it is football season, and of course, my PIC is talking about the latest episode of. Mm-hmm. Place to Be Nation's Extra Point, which is up. We did talk baseball first, but we did talk heavy football as well. So anyway,
maybe we should just talk really quick though about the major story today, and that is that Ray Rice cut by the Ravens.
He's toast
and banned from the league basically in it indefinitely from Raj. But I think Mr. Goodell may be in trouble because now they're saying based on new footage we went ahead and made this decision, but TMZ is now out. And since when did TMZ become the most credible news source in America? But it's happened. TMZ is out, and they're saying tomorrow they're going to drop a bombshell. They have indisputable proof that the NFL had seen or knew of this video previously. So do you think Goodell's done here, Scott?
Well, I mean, he thinks he's the, he thought he was the big fish in this pond. And, you know. I think it's sad that even not knowing what the footage was, regardless what the situation was, you should have just cut him loose to begin with and not done all this dog and pony show.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he beat the shit out of her pretty good, regardless of whatever, what it looked like. Beating the shit out of your fiance is beating the shit out of your fiance, regardless of how it looks. So,
yeah, it's, you know, not good.
It's pretty, it's not good.
And I mean, really, it's scary to think if TMZ didn't exist, would we even know about this or, you know, a few of the other things that are out there? I mean, this would have probably flown under the radar. It's like, yeah, who would have ever seen this video? Would Ray Rice even have been suspended?
Yeah, they would have thought there was some little scrum and he moves on and he's playing week five or whatever.
He's probably, you know, career's probably over, rightfully so. And I mean, I think Goodell, it might be hard for him really to survive this one.
Yeah, I mean, to not know, to know about it and kind of sweep it under the rug.
And yet, plus all the other shit that's happened recently.
And then bury the Saints for, you know, something kind of silly.
And the Josh Gordon thing and everything else just, you know, piling up, and it's going to be tough for him to survive, I think.
Yeah, I don't know who they have in the wings. The problem was they didn't need a Gestapo guy. They needed a guy like Pete Rozelle. Smiley guy, good with business people.
Well, see, I'd argue they did need kind of a Gestapo guy, just a guy that that does it when it's correct. I mean, he just has, he's all over the place with what he's doing. I mean, I think it is a time of year that they do need a Gestapo guy because
watch,
there
Goodell's
are
wife will come out, and Goodell's wife will come out, or his mistress will come out and say they need to shout her too. So, that's no big deal. I was in the same elevator. Don't worry about it.
So sorry. A lot of these accusations. But
come on, TMZ. Where is that elevator?
So let me throw this conspiracy theory at you.
Oh boy.
Any chance that Rice's wife, because everyone's bashing her for going through with marrying this guy, right? Or at least questioning her intelligence. What if this is her retaliation? She married him so she could divorce him when this came out and then get half his money. That's her payback.
Oh, she's a genius.
Knocked her out.
Smartest woman on the planet.
We'll see. We'll see. Anyway.
But he's toast. He's done. Even the Raiders. Even the Raiders, who have always been notorious for picking up stiffs off the scrap heap, even, and as bad as their running game is, as we saw on Sunday, they're not that desperate to take that on. No way. So
no, I wouldn't. I would hope not. I don't think I'd touch
no
this
one's
guy.
That
I mean,
no,
even if it's a redemption story, anything else, I just can't see it. I mean, we're talking like serious boycotting. We're talking major backlash for any team that takes this on, and just a moral thing. I mean, really, I know NFL's not really high in the morality, but how can you employ this guy? Is he? Do you need him that bad in your backfield to harbor this dude who, on video, just decked his wife and then coldly dragged her out? Like, it wasn't even, I mean, he showed no concern. He knocked her out and then dragged her out of the elevator cold, like he didn't give a shit.
Yeah. It was ugly. It was very ugly.
So,
Nah, he's done. Damn Rutgers alums. What do they teach in Jersey? Unreal. I don't even know if that's where he's actually from, but of course that's where he
I think he is from there.
School. Yeah.
Hey, what is going on here?
Slater's getting high on the roids.
I guess so.
He just threw Jesse
around. Roids is nothing now. I mean, look at this other shit going on. Roids is nothing. Who cares? Yeah. Guess.
All right. Anyway, yeah, no, we it was a great show. We Ray Rice thing happened, obviously, after the fact. But we do get go to break down the NFL, but a little baseball.
Okay.
Did you enjoy your boy's ceremony on Sunday? Did you get to catch any of it anywhere?
I did not see any of it because I am just, I mean, I think it's fitting that ostensibly they're eliminated from the playoffs on the day that they, you know, honored him, possibly the greatest playoff player and one of the greatest playoff players in their history.
Mm.
Obviously a Hall of Famer in their history, and he's gone now without a final playoff appearance, and they go down 2-0 in a miserable performance on the day of honoring him. And
kind of sad, huh? Moe's final season, Jeter's final season, no playoffs for either.
And I mean, last year it's one thing, they had so many injuries and everything else, and you know, this year I look at it and it's like, fuck. I mean, even with the pitching injuries, they had a very good chance to be there. They blew so many opportunities. And even then, still like three out down the stretch here. And they're just pissing away games. And they lost that stupid game to the Red Sox last week. And they got Tampa this week. They'll probably drop 2 out of 3. It's just so many winnable games. And the second wild card was there for the taking. But yeah, it looks like the last two seasons for these guys are going to go without the playoffs. So. Yeah.
Well, the doctor and I did mention on this episode that I am kicking around the idea of hosting a roundtable when the season ends to talk about El Capitan. I'd like to have you and Greenhouse on, and maybe we'll have. I want to get a nice cross reference of Jeter lovers like you and the doctor and Greeny, and then not haters, but guys like Dan and guys like Roger, you know, Red Sox fans, D'Amato, Met fans, and other their thoughts on him. as a player. And so it'll be very interesting. So look ahead to that in the next month or so, a special episode of The Extra Point. But anyway, you'll do more Place to Be Nation stuff later on. Let's dive in. He's already talked. We are in, of course, the big steel box, because we tonight are going to talk about a show that kind of flies under the radar. I think most of the secondary shows in this calendar year fly under the radar. However, when you think about this show, you ask yourself one question. Who's next?
Worcester, Massachusetts is next.
Worcester. Yeah, we don't have the open.
First time we're there. Tonight. I think we're probably going to forego most of the opens.
Yeah, no, they also, at this point,
not just that, but with the network, I mean, it's harder to find them. And
tonight, inside the Vintage Vault and the Place to Be podcast, we bring you Backlash 2003. And I was a little, it's kind of, for the first time, I was actually a little scared to click the network today because I wasn't sure what to expect. It's been a long time since I've watched this show.
It's funny because I didn't remember. I have only seen this probably a couple times before I watched it for this, and I didn't remember a lot of the matches. I mean, I always get this card, I think, confused with our next show, Judgment Day. I was expecting a lot of the matches that are Judgment Day on this show here, and then I realized I was off by a month. But, yeah, I hadn't seen a lot of these matches more than once or twice, so it was definitely an interesting watch. And, Scott, I think we're debuting Worcester, right? I don't think we've been there before.
We are. I was about to say that when we dive in. So, April 27th, 2003, live from the aforementioned Centrum in Worcester, Massachusetts. And I find it, I don't think it's ironic, non sequitur, or coincidental that 1 year after you graduate, they do a paper.
I know, right?
Worcester. Four fucking years there.
The real coincidence there is that they'd always have shows in Worcester when I was home. Like, they always seem to be over the summer or Christmas break.
Or Christmas break, yeah.
And then they would always have shows in Providence when I was in school. That's how it always seemed to fall. It was never a simple ride for me.
And the one chance you try to go to Worcester, you drive through the friggin' blizzard of hell. So right. I was talking to somebody about your ride, because that Raw, depending on how you look at it, December 29th, 98, or January 4th, 99, was on the stream. What a great, the best one-week stream in the history of the network last week. Every time you put the stream on, something cool was on.
Yeah.
You know, there was the Raw I went to in New Haven at the end of 98 when Austin was raised on the symbol, your Raw when Mick wins. It's a bunch of great stuff. A new chapter of Monday Night War debuts tomorrow night. So no, it was a great week for the Attitude Era stuff. But yeah, I mean, you've had some good Raws, but no pay-per-views. And you were there from, what, September 98 to May of 02, and nothing.
Nothing.
I mean, year later, oops, here you go.
And Worcester Centrum, do you want to talk about it?
Well, I just want to say the attendance is 10,000. I know you're going to get into the numbers, but I thought that was a pretty good number. 10,000? Not bad. So since it is a debut, give us the history of your beloved greatest moment of wrestling history site.
Actually opened in 1977, December 77. I'm sorry, broke ground December 77. It opened September 82. Typical Massachusetts building project. Takes five years.
5 years!
Typical.
What are they building? DOT buildings?
It's part of the big dig. Renovated in 09, 12, and 13. Expanded in 97. Built for a paltry $25 million, which would be $62 million today. Pretty small for the buildings we usually talk about on these shows. And let's talk about the team's attendance there. The Worcester Sharks of the AHL, still there, started in 06. The New England Surge of the CIFL, played there for a year. The New England Blazers of the MILL, played there for a couple of years. Massachusetts Marauders, the AFL, played there in 1994. The Worcester Ice Cats.
Yes.
Former AHL that became the Sharks, played there for 11 years, and the Worcester Counts of the WBL played there for a year as well. So
I didn't watch any at the Centrum, but the Worcester Ice Cats used to come here to the arena to play the Sound Tigers. So,
of course, now known as the DCU Center.
Yes, but back then still the beloved Centrum. What, talk about the place on the inside. Was it really a dive? Was it just kind of a bland, like the Springfield Civic Center, just kind of there? Any standout?
No.
Things about the building? No?
Not really.
Just another place?
Pretty basic. Pretty standard. I mean, inside it felt kind of like the Dunk, I guess. Just an arena.
Yeah.
There's
like 11 schools at Worcester. So were you closest to it? Or was it closer to Holy Cross? Or
Well, I mean, I guess technically WPI was closer, because WPI was like a mile down the road from Assumption towards the Centrum, so they're probably technically the closest. There might have been another one. That was Clark might have been.
Oh, can't badmouth Clark.
Yeah, be fired up. Ivy League of the Worcester
schools. Ivy League of Rhode Island, Massachusetts.
Clark, Holy Cross. They were all pretty central to it, I think, because it was really in the center of town.
Right.
This is one of the few times we could actually use Derek LaRue probably on the show. He's the Worcester Maven.
That is true, but it'll take him 3 hours to figure out the schools.
So let's go through the history of each school.
So guys, let me tell you, what did you think about that street corner? No. Your buy rate, 0.67. Your announcers.
Let's talk about each stoplight.
Yes. Your announcers. Your SmackDown announcers at ringside, of course, Michael Cole and Taz. But outside, out in the catacombs for Raw, we have guys we've already mentioned, but apparently things might be a little more permanent. Explain, JR.
Well, we have the coach and Jerry the King Lawler. And, right, of course, things had changed because on April 7th, Eric Bischoff came out, had words with Jim Ross. JR had been ripping Bischoff on commentary. Before Eric could fire him, JR quit, and Jonathan Coachman would take over his seat. So for right now, we get the coach and the king. We thought JR was back for good after Austin returned, but now it looks like he's back on the outs. So we'll cover that as we move along. Scott, this is a pretty good hype and a pretty big main event for a non-major show.
Absolutely.
And I also like the use of WCW clips to build up one of our main eventers that we'll talk about later.
Mm-hmm.
Product immediately feels different, doesn't it, to you? It's like the new era feel. It almost felt like WrestleMania 3 to me. Remember after WrestleMania 3 how different things felt? Like all of a sudden,
yes,
we're in these brighter arenas and these newer stars, and it almost felt like we went in reverse, kind of back to like a little bit of the smaller arenas, and all of a sudden all these big names are vanished. To me, it's like the first time. And it's something we've come to grips with nowadays. WrestleMania season, all of a sudden the day after, is like a reset and all the big names are gone.
Mm-hmm.
And it almost felt that way here to me.
Yeah.
I'm like, all right, we're back to just the guys we're going to have. That's it. I think injuries played a role in that too. I don't think it's just the names, but it definitely felt like, to me, like a completely new era.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think that a lot of it had to do with the roster thinning. And Worcester's going to not be the only unusual or unique site for a pay-per-view that we haven't seen probably since like 95, 96. I don't know if it's Unforgiven. Yeah, I think it's Unforgiven. And a couple other shows where we get some oddball sites for places that we haven't been to. You know, the Attitude Era was all big-time cities. I feel like 2003, we kind of go back to like 95 where we had like Saginaw and Winnipeg and all these kind of smaller venues. And I think we get a lot of that in 2003, and this is the first instance of it. Second pay-per-view in Massachusetts in 4 months.
Yes,
of course,
true.
Royal Rumble was, of course, in Beantown. All right. Any heat matches? I don't believe there were any. Were there?
No, I don't think so. Let me check. Let's go to the Sutton case notes, I guess. We'll run through those.
Oh, yeah,
we'll see.
Sutton case notes. Yeah, who's champions, etc.
All right, so we're sponsored by Castrol. The song was Cold by Remedy. Championship roll call.
No, I think it's Remedy by Cold.
Oh.
Whatever. Twilight porn.
I'm going by what's written for me here.
It's Remedy by Cold.
Well, you need the Remedy for the cold.
It's Alka-Seltzer.
Your Brock Lesnar is WWE champion.
Yes.
All right, so WWE champion Brock Lesnar, world champion Triple H, tag team champion still Rob Van Dam and Kane. Mm-hmm. Actually, they had won it on the 331 Raw. Tag team champions Charlie Haas and Shelton Benjamin. Matt Hardy still your cruiser champion, still your women's champion Trish Stratus. We had some TV returns that we'll talk about. We'll have a couple debuts. One man has left the promotion, Scott. We talked about him a bit at No Way Out. That was Jeff Hardy. He ended up leaving in April. You want to guess how many matches he had in his career in WWE, counting everything?
Jesus. Well, let's see. I mean, he started in earnest in 98, late 98. I mean, he had a couple of jobber matches, 95? 450?
684 matches in his career so far.
Wow.
TV record between 94 and 03 is a 164, 195, and 15. So losing record overall. His first ever win.
He beat somebody by count out. Triple H probably or something like that, right?
Defeated Razor Ramon on the 113-96 Superstars.
Wow. I think the jobbing out was already happening.
I think that must have been something like Goldust, probably. That may have been the count out you're thinking of. Goldust distracted him or something. So, that's very interesting. One wrestling death. We had the passing of Ray Mendoza at age 73. Raw passed 517 episodes. SmackDown 193. Looks like there was a heat. Standard heat saw Chief Morley defeat Maven. Christopher Nowinski defeated Shark Boy. Steven Richards defeated Tommy Dreamer, and Ivory beat Molly Holly in the official pay-per-view heat. Scott Steiner defeated Rico, so Steiner
in a minute,
relegated.
1 minute and 5 seconds. Awful. I mean, what the hell happened?
Brutal. And then we'll talk about, we got some other notes here from Steven that we'll cover.
He does show up on this show for about 2 minutes, about two-thirds away through the show. We have that underlying backstage storyline going on between a couple of divas, and he pops up. So,
yes.
All right, let's dive in. We have a lot of title matches. Well, we got about, I think, 4 title matches on the show tonight. We begin with the Blue Belts, otherwise known as the WWE Tag Team Championships. Your champions are JR's boys, Mr. Haas, Mr. Benjamin, Team Angle. Have not changed their names yet, JR. Have not changed their names yet to the more familiar team name down the line. They are still Team Angle.
Mm-hmm.
Coming out with the picture of Kurt with the... I was going to play a song, but why bother? With the medals. I thought that was pretty nice touch.
Yeah, I liked it.
That sounds like something you would tell them to do. This is very Sven Jolly-ish.
We'll see. That'll slowly kind of dissipate as we move along here. But for this show here, they're still very much, Angle supporters and playing up their allegiance to him.
Mm, yeah. Taking on the team that they beat for the titles earlier in the month or the month before, and that was Los Guerreros.
Yes.
Eddie and Chavo. This is where you begin where SmackDown just really takes off.
For the most part, there's still some pieces that we'll talk about. 03 is a weird year. A lot back and forth on both shows. Mm-hmm. I think 04 is when we settle more, things flip a bit. But 03, there's a lot of kind of flux on both ends.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I thought this is a good choice for an opener. Team Angle has some great heat. Guerrero's losing a little bit of steam. They're kind of in this weird tweener role. They don't really have much definition. Are they, cheaters and heels, or are they fun-loving faces? They haven't really... I feel like they're not really settled in any particular spot just yet. I think Cole and Taz's commentary has got really crisp, fast, and full of information. They pack in tons of data along with calling the match, and they just really work at it. They fit this style. We talked about at WrestleMania. They fit the style more than the antiquated style of Ross and Lawler, I thought.
Yeah, I agree. And Taz is getting very funny. He's talking about being embarrassed or something. He goes, "Well, I don't know. When the camera goes on, I'm sitting next to you. I'm embarrassed every night."
Yeah,
it was really funny. He's getting
very, very quick. Los Guerreros a bit lax. They ham it up a little bit for psychology. Team Angle tries to match their attitude. So good mat work early. Eddie starts to take over on Shelton. Both teams cheat whenever they can. The crowd loses interest a bit, but Team Angle control work I thought was really on point, and Eddie was really good selling it. Crowd starts to rally Eddie. Really good structure here in the opener. New style really started to seep in, as we mentioned before. A very long heat segment on Eddie with lots of quick tags from Team Angle. A great Shelton powerbomb on Chavo. Team Angle then cheats to win. I thought it was a fun, well-worked opener. No shenanigans or overbooking needed, just wrestling, and it worked. Los Guerreros attacked them after the bell, and they steal the title. So kind of obviously setting up a rematch here. We're not done with these two. But I really like this opener. I thought it was well-worked. It again, fits the feel of SmackDown and where we're headed.
Yeah, and I think what's even better is that they get these matches get even better. I mean, I wouldn't put this as 5 stars. I would say 2.5, maybe hitting 3. But they get even better as time progresses. The crowd, you mentioned the crowd, JR, and this crowd is very weird. They're not a bad crowd. I mean, typical Northeast crowd, pretty hot, but
all right.
Energy wise, kind of funky. You know, like they angle towards things, no pun intended, that you think they wouldn't, and then they kind of beg off stuff mm-hmm. that you thought they'd get into. Very strange crowd, and I think that adds to the odd energy of the show.
Right.
But fantastic match, a little over, just a scoosh over 15 minutes.
Yeah, good long opener. They get a lot of time. And like I said, I like that there's no overbooking, no shenanigans. They just go out there, wrestle, and they won the crowd over, and it made sense, and mm-hmm. the champions went over, and we continue the feud. Like, everything was told in a nice little package, and you could tell Eddie was really the ringleader out there, but... Team Angles is ahead of the game for their age. I mean, they really are.
Yeah, no, absolutely, and they just get better. So Team Angle retains the WWE Tag Team Championships, but don't leave with the belts, as the typical liars, cheaters, and stealers
mm-hmm.
and thieves take the belts with them.
Gypsies, tramps,
and thieves.
That should have been their theme.
Dressed like an Indian squaw, like Cher was.
Another bottle of Dr. Good.
So there you go. Team Angle retains the titles. All right. Next up, we have a very odd.
You're very odd.
Segment start, and it's pretty much the underlying backstage story of the show. And this coincides with a big return, a return that I think no one ever saw coming. Tell us, JR.
Sean O'Hare. Is that what you're talking about?
No, slightly before that.
Anyway. So in January 2003, vignettes started to appear on SmackDown showing Sean O'Hare in a new gimmick. In the promos, he played a devil's advocate character where he urged people to commit various sins like adultery and encouraged them to break the law, not pay taxes, and not go to church. Sounds like your nightmare, Scott. But
exactly.
Each vignette ended with the line, "I'm not telling you anything you don't already know." O'Hare had returned to the main roster, telling various superstars to perform in decent acts. He also had a new look that included a long black trench coat, tights, and tattoos that featured spiders. O'Hare eventually hooked up with Roddy Piper, and as the goal was to use Piper's heat to get O'Hare over as a major player. Now, Scott, let me ask you first, before we move on any further, your thoughts on this O'Hare character. Because I feel like it's beloved in time. It's like it's always looked back on fondly, and people want to redo it. And they thought he was buried and not given a chance to get over, and they thought it really could have worked. I mean, it was great in vignettes. How it's almost similar like Bray Wyatt today. Like, this great character in theory and really well executed. But what is the goal once you get in the ring of a guy like this? Like, what is his ultimate goal? What's he trying to do?
Before we even get to that point, though, based on the very sinister, very dark character that he was trying to portray in these vignettes, I don't think Piper was the right guy to get heat off of. Piper wasn't that kind of guy. Piper wasn't dark, per se. He was a good bad guy back in the day, and incredible.
Well, I think the idea was that they're both like manipulators. But they almost get away from that O'Hare gimmick when they put him a Piper. I think that was part of the problem, right? They get away from that whole part, and now he's just like Piper's muscle. And
yeah,
I think they thought
maybe he'd
get over more as the muscle. But I'm talking even before Piper got involved. Just like when you saw that character, how could they, like, what, how does that work? You know what I mean? I guess that's my point. How does a character, like, what is his ultimate end game? He's just trying to get people to do bad things? Okay. Well, now he's wrestling. He's still going to deliver in the ring. And what are his feuds going to be about? Like, what's he trying to get people to do? He's trying to get Brock Lesnar to, you know, cheat on his way. I mean, like, what is the, I don't understand, like, what he's, he'd almost would have worked better as, like, that character would have been almost a better manager.
Yeah. Or he does the reverse and tells people, you must go to church. You must pay your taxes.
Well,
kind
now
of be
you're
a
just
creepy
getting
IRS.
Into it. Yeah, but now you're just getting into it. Preacher character. I don't know. Like, the idea was that he was a devil's advocate. He's always telling you the things, well, you know, you should do this, but
right. But I
why
mean,
bother?
I mean, do you attempt to swing baby faces to heels? I mean, do you tell
them?
Well,
as a manager, maybe you could do a little bit more. Yeah, you try and convince faces to come to the heel, the dark side. I just, as a wrestler, like, it's almost like, what's his goal? It's like I said, it's almost like Bray Wyatt. It's like, what's his, all right, he's a cult guy. All right, now he just wrestles. It's almost like, what? It's a really good character, and the execution is good. But it's like once you, it's almost better like as a movie or TV character than a wrestler, you know? He almost would have been better suited just hanging out backstage and messing with people than actually ever wrestling. So it was odd. And then, yeah, they killed it anyway. So on the April 3rd SmackDown, Vince McMahon brought a Hulk Hogan to seemingly bury the hatchet. After they shook hands, Vince changed gears and announced that he was sending Hogan home. He announced that he wanted him gone and he would gladly pay him to sit on the sidelines. Hogan left. The next week saw the official return of Piper's Pit. Piper had Vince as his guest, and they did the usual back and forth with little cheap shots. During the pit, Rikishi came out carrying a coconut. He was looking for revenge on Piper for his actions on Jimmy Snuka back in 1983, or whenever that was. 84. Before he could hit Piper, Sean O'Hare came out and took out Rikishi. Piper then grabbed the coconut and smashed Rikishi with it. A week later, Snuka made an appearance, but he and Rikishi got beat down again. Piper announced that O'Hare was now his protege, so they could act evil together. Finally, on the 424 SmackDown, Piper and Rikishi squared off in a match. Rikishi had Piper lined up for the stink face, but O'Hare attacked to draw the DQ. Okay, so if Piper wasn't with O'Hare, how else would you have used him?
I don't know. I mean, the character's so complex. It's almost like I hate to use the comparison. I mean, 8 years earlier, he's almost like kind of a Waylon Mercy.
No. So not O'Hare. How would you have used Piper?
Oh, Piper. I thought you meant O'Hare.
If you don't put Piper with O'Hare, how would you have used Piper?
I don't know. I mean, he doesn't fit any of the heels on the roster, on the SmackDown roster. What's he going to do, hang out with Triple H and Flair? He's not going to go to Raw.
I think maybe just be aligned with Vince, I guess. I mean, is that it? I mean, that's...
But he doesn't even like Vince.
Well, he's kind of against Hogan.
Yeah.
I mean, I think I just would not even use him as a... Man, I probably just would have done like Piper's Pits and used him as like that kind of stuff.
Yeah, just make it a heel. Like
maybe someone
talk
came
segment.
Around.
I can't see him. He just doesn't fit any of the heels. I mean, I don't know. seemed very out of. It was okay for that little bubble of Hogan and Vince at 19, but I can't see him fitting anywhere. He just seems so out of touch.
You know what it seems like? Feels like a gypsy, a tramp, and a thief.
It's a wait for you to look for this song. Here, here. With a lower voice than Sean O'Hare.
Is the doctor good?
What's Roddy Piper? All right. So this mess of a match here does not get much better than the description. We should mention quickly,
I think that the first off, why was Rikishi in a t-shirt? He never comes out in a t-shirt. And then he wrestles in it.
The whole thing was a mess. Well, he's fat.
He's been fat since 2000. What difference does it make?
He bulked up a bit. I mean, it was cool to see Piper back. It was a little bit surreal. And again, Sean O'Hare back on TV. So Piper puts him over strong in the student-teacher gimmick. Hogan home, Piper in cahoots with Vince. But Rikishi, another guy too. We're not even talking about him, how badly he doesn't fit. He feels really just needs an overhaul. Something. Go back to being, you know, Headshrinker Fatu. Make it something different. Make a difference, Fatu.
You just bring him back. Make a difference versus Sean O'Hare.
Oh, God, right? It would have fit. He just feels so just outdated. So Rikishi gets off to a quick start. Piper gets involved quickly, and I thought Rikishi had way too much offense. I thought this should have been a squash. O'Hare's bland offense didn't help things either. They go to rest holds early on. The crowd's kind of shitting on it. We get a messy finish. Piper's stumbling around with the coconut. O'Hare looks like a loser. Can't win without the 60-year-old man stumbling around. Rikishi hits Piper with the coconut, and then O'Hare gets to win. I thought he just looked like a goof. I didn't think this helped O'Hare at all. I thought Rikishi was the wrong person for this, unless you were going to job him out. To make him look strong at all was really stupid. And then, I mean, Piper looked like he stumbled out of, like, the Alzheimer wing of a mental hospital. He's just, like, walking in circles.
The Kukla, Fran, and Ollie music again.
Yeah, he's walking in circles, and, you know, there's a coconut. Ah! I was waiting for Johnny Polo to come out with a plunger. The whole thing was a mess. I mean, the whole thing was a mess. Right? Hey, Rikishi, got that coconut over here. It just didn't make any sense. It really didn't. It was just... It made him look super weak. I thought I didn't enjoy this match at all, and I was looking forward to the hair stuff, and it just has not. It did not help him one bit. He would have been better off in a different gimmick. All the fans would come to town and lay the money down.
Oh, God.
Disaster.
What a mess. All right, so that's done. Well, that match is done. We get more Piper over the coming couple of months, so.
Yeah, which is good. I mean, I like Piper. A bad fit. So, yeah, okay, so we missed something earlier. That was backstage. I think that's where you're hinting at originally.
Yeah.
So Tess tries to mack on Torrey Wilson in the back.
A fucking scumbag.
His face run is now over, and he's into the sleazy heel. He's trying to cheat on Stacy. He calls Torrey a tease. Really creepy and lecherous. It's almost like too much, and he forces a kiss on her and says, oh, I know you like it rough. Like, it was really edgy.
He's like one of those bar assholes, you know what I'm saying? Like, oh, go away.
It was like, over the top. I mean, it felt... Like I just couldn't even. Could you imagine something like this airing today? I mean, I was pitching. Like, we talk about all the attitude stuff that's dated. To me, this was really dated. This muscle bound, roided up
Ravens 33 jersey,
zit it up freak, trying to, you know, just force his girl to make out with him.
Thank God he wasn't in the elevator.
I think he was putting some Dr. Good on her.
Dr. Good, yeah.
So Sable is back, by the way. I think that's who you're talking about, Scott. The mysterious return. She's snooping around and then she walks off. We'll talk more about her. I think at our next show, but she had been gone since what, summer 99?
Was it even summer? Did she even make it to summer?
Yeah, I think it was like June. May
was she there? Was she there at, well, I don't know, she wasn't over the edge.
Oh, yeah, so May was like May, she left.
I think it was like May. I think Backlash was definitely her last, so it's been almost exactly 4 years.
And now she randomly came back. I mean, this is one of those ones immediately that people were like, wow, maybe Vince does forgive everyone. We remember Sable tried to sue him and was really nasty on her way out. Things got ugly, and he brought her back here, and she's kind of basically just his cougar slut that sneaks around backstage and Yeah, basically, right? That's her role.
It is. She's, you know, she's at this point, she's probably in her late 30s, maybe even hitting 40, and still looks awesome. But, yeah, Vince's cougar slut. What a great t-shirt that would have made for them.
And my cougar slut,
and my
Sable.
Cougar slut, Sable.
Right. So then after the Rikishi match, we go backstage again. That's where Sable tells Stacy that Tori was flirting with Test, and Stacy gets pissed off.
Yeah.
And now we go to the ring.
Where's Dr. Good? All right. We have our second title match of the evening. We go to the red ring.
Elsewhere.
We go for elsewhere for the other tag titles.
That's gotta be Kane!
Correct. Same color as the belt. The red belts. The World Tag Team Championship. Your champions, as JR mentioned, Kane and RVD. One thing before we get to the match, before we get to their opponents and the backstory, I always feel like Kane was the best singles tag guy. Like, if you look through history, he always had good partners and good tag reigns.
Oh, was he the best tag singles guy?
Tag singles guy. Meaning tag team
tag
wrestler.
First.
Tag first.
Kind of like an Arn Anderson.
Yes.
The modern day Arn Anderson.
Modern day Arn Anderson.
I mean, Chad Campbell slit his wrists.
Yes. Or stabbed with scissors. You know, X-Pac and obviously Taker.
I don't do any tricks.
He could even want a tag strap with Kane. Imagine Kane with a, you know, with a mask and that had like the cockroach on it. I figured you'd like that, Tubby. Anyway, and now here he is with RVD and their tag champs and their opponents, JR, the Oppressed, the Dudley Boys, the Bubba Ray and D-Von, and a special guest referee. Tell us about it.
Sean Morley. We've talked about him before. The Chief. Kane and RVD had won the tag team championships by defeating Morley and Storm and the Dudleys in a triple threat on 331. If RVD and Kane had lost, they too would have been forced into indentured servitude under Eric Bischoff. After WrestleMania, Chief Morley continued to put pressure on the Dudleys, holding their jobs over their heads. He had them added to RVD and Kane's tag title match on 331 to serve as protection. During the match, D-Von would take a chair from Morley to prevent him from using it, but would get nailed with a Van Daminator and eliminated. RVD and Kane would go on to defeat Storm Morley win the belt. A week later, Kane was forced to battle the Dudleys in a handicap match. They would win, and with the help of Storm, they beat the champions with chairs. On 414, Storm and Morley got the rematch. The Dudleys interfered, but D-Von's conscience got to him and refused to help out. RVD and Kane would retain the belts. Morley granted his reluctant charges a match here and named himself special guest referee. Were you still feeling the Chief Morley thing?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, even though Bischoff has a co-GM, I don't know when you want to delve into that.
Has that happened yet?
Yeah.
Oh, because it's not here.
Maybe not.
No, I think it's after this.
No, it's after this. Yeah. You're right.
Because they didn't talk about it at all.
Yeah, no, I was reading, that's right, when I was reading Wikipedia notes and some other stuff. It was after this paper.
Because he's all over the next two shows.
Yeah, no, so never mind. So, well, no, then in that case, no. Then it's definitely good.
Well, it's almost like he's handling Bischoff's lower-end business on the card.
Right.
I mean, Bischoff handles the big stuff, and he's handling this shit.
The grunt stuff, yeah, pretty much. No, I thought it was fine. I mean, that was pretty much the foundation of how the brand ran creatively anyway, is you had the... You know, I mean, the Kane... Oh, the Kane. The Bischoff-Stephanie stuff, Raw vs. SmackDown, kind of fizzled out. You know, I think having this kind of heel foundation was good for the show. I mean, obviously, if SmackDown was the talent brand, then the in-ring brand, then Raw was to be the character-driven brand, and this was the right way to go about it. So, no, I was cool with it.
Well, I'm glad you were cool with it. No one else was. No. So he's still fucking with the tag division. The Dudley's still doing the bidding. There's dissension as Bubba wants to keep doing the bidding, and D-Von doesn't want to sell out anymore. Tag runs really helped reinvigorate RVD a bit after his kind of lull for the end of 02, early 03. Gets a hot start here, dominates both Dudleys. Kane does good work in these makeshift tag teams, like you said. Kane and RVD work seamlessly as a unit, quick tags that dominate the match. Morley hits a low blow to Kane to stop a choke slam. We get some miscommunication, and Morley hits Bubba. D-Von attacks Morley to a huge pop. Storm comes out as well, and the Dudleys run him off. Kind of a weird dynamic here with all who's face, who's heel, who's doing what. No referee. RVD and Kane make a hot comeback. RVD hits the 5-star, and we get a new ref comes out, and I thought the crowd was actually super hot for this one. It was a fun match. The booking was sloppy, and it was kind of all over the place, but the crowd heat and the hard work of all the guys involved made it kind of fun to watch.
Yeah, and the pacing was good. You know, a little over 13 minutes. I would make it one of the showcase matches of the show if you give it that much time.
Yeah.
The Dudley kind of indentured thing, I thought that was fine. I thought that would have run its course a little bit, though. So I was waiting. I was hoping for an end game out of it. I honestly thought Kane was going to turn heel here. And when he was standing there and he was about to take out the Dudleys, I thought Kane was going to boot RVD in the head and join Team Bischoff. So when I was watching it again, I thought, oh, I wonder if that happened. Like, it was funny. I kind of blanked out for a minute and was watching it as if I'd never watched it before. And I'm thinking, oh, Kane's going to turn heel here. I thought that. And I remember thinking, you know what? I think that's not the first time I thought that. So, but instead they stay the champs and they were pretty popular. And one thing I have to say, JR, is I feel like we've talked about this, this dreaded run of opponents that Triple H has had since the gold belt returned in September. I feel like a lot of them have recovered a little bit. Kane's kind of settled into a nice role. Actually, it's both of them, Kane and RVD, mm-hmm. for that matter. Sean is Sean. He'll recover from anything. We'll talk about Booker in a couple minutes. And, of course, a new guy has now jumped on the
Sure, they've all recovered, but none of them are a world champion.
Well, no, that's true. But
yeah, they recovered to the tag division feud with the old-ass stale Dudleys.
But we'll explain the reason at the end of the show. I know, but still. But
yeah.
They're all thieves and gypsies.
That just happened.
A gypsy gimmick. Matt Rotella would have loved that. So I guess Kizarni 5 years later would have
been. How about a gimmick where you attend fun events and talk about shit like losing jobs, funerals, and cancer?
Oh, Jesus.
That's a hell of a gimmick.
Yeah, it is really. It is. It's and you're getting out-macked by 80-year-old guys. Now, so there you go. So the RVD and Kane retain the Raw or World Tag Team Championships.
And we had backstage again, Scott, where Tori goes to apologize, and Stacy flips out and smacks her. Doesn't believe her, so they fight a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's like it's extended segment too. Like the whole room's there, and Molly Holly's trying to break them up, and what's her name is in there. Her name just blanked. The Tori.
That's later. That's our next segment, I think. The next
Jamie Noble's girl. Oh, Nydia. What the brawl? Nydia? No,
they slap here, and then we come back, and they're still fighting later.
Oh, okay, that's right. All right, so it's the next piece. Okay. All right, we now have yet another title match, JR, mm-hmm. our third of the evening. The Women's Championship on the line. Your champion, your girl, Trish Stratus, after a great win in the triple threat at WrestleMania, taking on one of the two from that match, and that being Jazz. And you know what's funny, JR?
She's victorious.
Yes. 1 year earlier, these same two met at Backlash.
Yeah, there's always similarities in these April shows sometimes year to year. I feel like or is it April and September, I feel like. Year to year, sometimes you get these weird rematches. But in late 2002, D'Lo Brown turned heel. Remember him? Turned heel due to his feeling that he was being prejudiced against due to his race. On the January 20th Raw, D'Lo came to the ring along with referee Teddy Long. Only Teddy was no longer a referee. He asked why D'Lo was being held down due to his race and revealed that Teddy would now be managing him. On the 2016 Heat, Teddy fired Brown for the newly titled Thuggin' and Buggin' Enterprises, so it was a short run. D'Lo had actually been released earlier that week, and Teddy now brought out Rodney Mack to be his new charge on the 2017 Raw. Mack had last been seen as a brief cameo as John Cena's running buddy earlier in the year, Red Dog. On 4-7 Raw, Jazz officially joined Long's group as well, and a week later, Jazz picked up a submission win on Trish in a tag match. Long and Jazz put one final beat down on Trish the week before. Teddy Long makes his debut as a manager. Good move, of course. Yep. Longtime manager in the NWA. Mm-hmm. Had been applying his trade as a ref since he jumped ship in, what did he come over, like 98, 99?
Yeah, 98. What was he managing? Ice Train?
Yeah, he was doing all that stuff. Then he was managing the Jobbers on Saturday Night, Hard Work Bobby Walker and those guys. And then
Hard Work Bobby Walker.
He did. He was managing a bunch of, like, a stable of Jobbers, Craig Pittman and all those bums. I think it was like 98, 99. He came over and started working as a ref. And he's been in that role until now. So, Stables and the promos about being held down, of course. Trish is selling a rib injury. I thought Coach actually did an okay job with the storytelling in some of these matches. Talks about how Trish needs to end this one early because the ribs, the longer it goes on, the more she'll get beaten down. Once Jazz takes over, we go to her methodical offense and the shit-talking begins. Trish kind of blends in now, I thought. Developed to be solid. Keeps learning, but it's acceptable on a routine basis. So she can go out there. We don't have to talk about anymore how she looks good for who she is. I feel like she's to the point now where she's another diva.
Yeah.
Another women's wrestler, I should say.
And a good worker.
Yeah.
I can't believe they never made a Thuggin' and Buggin' t-shirt.
I can.
It would have been a perfectly hilarious t-shirt to have.
I don't think that was the port of the stable to be hilarious. But so Trish goes for an STF.
Well, this is Vince we're talking about. Everything ends up being hilarious.
Trish goes for an STF, hits a bulldog, but my favorite spot of the night, Teddy Long throws his shoe in and breaks up the pin with it. I thought that was great that Teddy just no-sells it. He throws a shoe and just kind of puts his arms behind his back and walks in a circle. A decent amount of time for a women's match. Jazz hooks the ropes and gets the win. Good rebuilding. She is victorious. Helps put over Teddy stable, and Trish is back on the chase, which suits her better anyway. And I thought a fine little women's match here.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying to wrap my head around the fact that we're supposed to take Thuggin' and Buggin' seriously. I don't
know. Well, I mean, the whole point of the goal is that these, you know, African Americans are being held down. I
understand that, so they should be
like
represented
the oddities.
Thuggin' and Buggin'.
It's like the oddities.
I can't see Martin Luther King going, on this day, we'll be thugging and bugging. No, it just doesn't
matter.
That
fantastic. That was in his forgotten speech.
the unabridged version.
Yes.
So there you go. Jazz is your new women's champion. Yeah, it was a good match. It was solid. You know, just under 6 minutes. And I think we've all said that Jazz is an exceptional talent.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you know, not on the beauty scale, but definitely maybe one of the top two, three workers in the whole company.
Rough tonight.
And D'Amato said that Jazz was not very pretty. He's thugging and bugging all the time. Jazz is your new women's champion. All right. I think this is where the show kind of drops dramatically in terms of fan patience, meaning that you know, we have a lot of patience for certain things, but this just made no sense whatsoever. This whole feud, this match, none of it made any sense. Mm-hmm. And the post-match.
Oh, the post-match will get there. That is awful. So on the 417 SmackDown, Rey Mysterio and Tajiri lost a match to Big Show and A-Train. After the match, Rey nailed Show with a 619 around the ring post, pissing Show off. A week later, Show caught Tajiri and Funaki watching the clip and destroyed the TV and VCR. Later that night, Rey would cost Show a match where Tajiri, when he was pushed him into the ring post and caused him to get counted out, Show was given a chance for revenge here. On the surface, it's a cool match, right? You get the Big Show, and then you get the Tiny Ray. Mm-hmm. Kind of a WCW-ish rematch. Interesting feud for Ray. Show needed a bounce back after losing the Taker feud. Ray tries to fly around, but Show just manhandles him and pounds him over and over. Ray's really selling and get a good height on his dives, and I thought that put over Show's size nicely. Ray gets one last flurry, but Show's too big. It's an effective beatdown. I thought it was a tough loss for Ray, but Show needed it badly. At the time, many were upset with this because they thought Big Show was played out. And they thought Ray was kind of getting jobbed for no reason. But I thought it was needed when you've watched the Evolution of Show over the last 6 months. Now, after the match, Ray is on a stretcher. He's getting carted out. Big Show, and part of the stretcher is a board, you know, it's on like one of those big plastic boards strapped to it. Big Show picks the board up and swings Ray into the ring post like a baseball bat.
Mm-hmm. And not gurney first, body first.
Right, which is fine. To me, the ugly part was that he lets it go, and Ray falls like face and head first on the floor, like hard, smashes off the floor. And I thought it was insane. I thought it was gross. I thought it was ugly. I thought it was not needed. I thought it made Big Show look like a prick and not in the good way, like not character-wise. I thought it made him just look like an asshole of a person.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it made him look careless for a guy like Ray, who was a longtime veteran, and they were probably friends. Like, it really felt awful, like really dangerous. I mean, really dangerous. Like Ray's head really smacks off the fucking the floor. Like it was not pretty. And it turned me off completely. I didn't mind the match, and I was fine with Show squashing him, but that just made me feel like, fuck you, Big Show. Like, even if you're told to do it and Ray is fine with it, I mean, how do you go through with that? Like, and I don't care, it's a cool visual, like him swinging the bat. I'm sure that's what they were thinking, and they're trying to make him off to be a killer. You can do something safer than that. To let him just fall face first, unable to protect his face or head. You know, just arm strapped to his side. Just a stupid bump.
How do you just throw him? I mean, if you're going to swing him, why don't you just let him down? You don't just drop him. I mean, what's the matter with you? Absolutely careless.
No, it made no sense.
No,
it was
absolutely
awful.
Careless. Yeah. Let's move on. We have our next title match of the evening, and this is probably another reason why people don't fancy
actually. This is
this
where
show.
We run backstage quick. Tori and Stacy still fighting. Scott Steiner saves Stacy, which pisses off Test, and Test bitches out Stacy, even though he's the one that started all this for being a scumbag. So we have not seen the last of Test and Scott Steiner here in 2003.
No,
plenty of fun to come. And this is what Steiner has been relegated to. Misses WrestleMania and is now breaking up cat fights in the back.
Cat fights with sleaze bags, pretty much. All right. Here's where the booking of the main event is so big that the two major championships in the company are kicked to the back burner, which I guess is not the end of the world for a secondary show. It's not.
Oh, especially ridiculous. When you consider the match in this one.
Yeah. Time for the WWE Championship to be on the line. Your champion, Brock Lesnar, who of course defeated your boy Kurt Angle at WrestleMania 19. Tell us how we got to this opponent, JR.
We got here through a tournament, Scott. On April 3rd, SmackDown.
Better than that.
Stephanie McMahon announced there'd be an 8-man tournament held to face determine who would face Brock Lesnar at the pay-per-view. In round one action that week, Undertaker defeated Rey Mysterio. Chris Benoit defeated A-Train. John Cena beat Eddie Guerrero. And the Rhino, here at the SummerSlam.
Okay, Brett.
And Rhino beat Big Show. During the show, Cena cut a rap promo on Undertaker. Unfortunately, Taker had been preoccupied with ongoing issues with the full-blooded Italians. Nunzio and his boys have been running amok in Undertaker's matches over the last couple months. We'll get into that a little bit more next month. A week later, Benoit knocked off Rhino. In an upset, Cena beat the Undertaker thanks to the FBI. That was a big win for him. The following week, Brock came out for an interview. We talked about WrestleMania, but Cena interrupted and demanded that respect be paid. He also questioned the legitimacy of Brock's WrestleMania concussion because someone would need a brain in order to get one. Chris Benoit then showed up and told Cena he had to beat him first. Cena agreed with that logic, but then laid out Benoit, and after Benoit turned around. Later that night, Cena picked up another big win, defeating Benoit to advance to Backlash. And finally, on the 424 SmackDown, Cena interfered in Brock Lesnar's match with A-Train, left him laying to head to this match with some momentum. Cena picking up tons of momentum overall. Mm-hmm. A really hot act at this time, and they strapped it to him big time. In a month, goes over Undertaker on TV, goes over Benoit on TV, and gets a title match. I mean, if you're going to go with a guy, right, you go with him. So they did it. they said, screw it, we're going with him. And they did. Did you feel he was believable in any way heading into this match?
Yes, based on the way that the SmackDown roster is structured.
Would have been surprised if he won here?
Oh, won the title?
Yeah, yes, is he believable as a possible
champion?
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
As a number one contender, yes.
Yes.
As the guy who could beat Brock at this point, kind of funny that we're talking about these two
right now. Right.
Could he have won here? No. He wasn't quite there yet. But was he a credible number one contender? Yes. The only other guy I could have seen in this spot, if you turned him heel, and they didn't, was Benoit. I think a Benoit-Brock match would have been pretty awesome, to be honest with you. But we don't get that. They keep Benoit.
I was
face.
Surprised they did that. They didn't do that. I mean, well, you can't complain. The elevating talent that they desperately needed to do. So I'm not going to sit here and say they should have redone Benoit, but... You know, maybe it would have been good, I guess. It could have been a great match, one that they don't really end up doing, so.
Mm.
But it's hard to get on them for.
Yeah.
For not really getting. It was hard to bash them when they were doing the right thing for their business. Exactly. A good build here. I thought Cena's serious, angry raps and promos were fantastic. Super fast elevation with a dearth of top talent, like you mentioned. Cena, big run through the SmackDown tournament, picking up a lot of key wins. Impressive swagger. He felt like a changing of style, not in-ring, but character type. Mm-hmm. For him as well, this kind of a bit more serious, and he's starting to feel like he feels he should belong. Brock gets a good pop as the new face of the company, overpowers Cena early, feels like the alpha dog. Cena turns a tide on the floor. He actually busts Brock open on the head, and the blood kind of makes Cena seem like even more of a threat, I thought.
Yes.
We get a lengthy rear choke. The crowd's actually behind Cena here, and they seem to already be tiring of Brock the face. Did you feel that way?
Absolutely. We got the chance. Let's go Cena chance. Kind mm-hmm. of funny.
I know, right?
But
weird time warp.
I know. But, I mean, don't forget, you are in Worcester, and I don't know how far away West Newbury is, but...
Close, but still. Same state.
Yeah, but, you know, it's still same state. So I think part of that is part of the game as well. But, yeah, I mean, Brock's just not a good seller. You just don't see
him. He's a good seller. He's such a big...
Not that he's not trying. I think my point is visually.
I think people just want to see him...
big guy.
Yeah, they just want to see him kick the shit out of people.
Yeah.
And we'll get there again soon enough, but it'll be interesting. We'll talk about his different kind of face matches here on and off, but I think part of the problem was his booking, and it's, you know, kind of harken back to the Diesel days, right? You take this badass killer and you throw him out there, you give him the title, and all of a sudden he's smiling and joking and goofing around. It just, it felt very un-Brockish.
Un-Brockus?
Das.
Bulldog's going to go Randy. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I just like, yeah. I'm not saying he wasn't trying to sell. It just didn't feel right for him to sell, considering how he was built as a heel in 2002 and late 2002 into 03 as a babyface.
Mm-hmm.
Now, to Cena's credit, he did a pretty good job of beating the snot out of him.
Yeah.
He was very vicious.
Oh, yeah. No, he
busted him open.
Here.
It was, again, very coincidental and ironic and non sequitur, considering what's going on modern day. But I like the match, though. It was very unique. I can understand people tiring of Brock's, you know, babyface shtick. But it didn't affect me liking the match. I mean, they gave him a lot of time. I mean, you know, over 15 minutes. So, yeah, I had no problem with it. But again, I see Cena as a credible number one contender. Again, only Benoit would see in this spot. They clearly, as we see, Taker has the month off.
Mm-hmm.
But as a world champion, no, not yet. No, not even close.
So
my question for you, though, quickly. Surprise Taker's off. Are you surprised he's in this FBI feud? Seems kind of beneath him.
It was a good way to I think they were just really working hard to trying to elevate guys on SmackDown. They needed talent. So I thought it was fine. I mean, they weren't really in a feud. They were just kind of like a thorn in his side. Back to the match quick, though. Cena gets a near fall and a low blow, working hard again to make it seem like a threat. Brock hits an F5 for the hard-fought win. Good work here to give Brock a solid defense, elevate Cena. Nothing wrong with his loss here at all. I thought he looked strong even in losing. Fine match. A little bland, and the commentators put Cena over very hard throughout.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Yeah. So there you go. Brock Lesnar retains the WWE Championship in actually a pretty good match. I don't think it's on any... I don't know if Cena would have it on any of his comps. I don't know if it's on Brock's Here Comes the Pain. It might be. I don't exactly know. But obviously, you could watch it on the network on the Backlash 03 show. So, but he retains the title here. All right. We've kind of motored our way through so far. Pretty crisp six matches. We'll take a break. When we come back, we've got a big six-man tag. And then the main event, the match that made this show, really. And the first real... Not defection, but even with the Monday Night War over, the first real WCW move. But first, many words, because...
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly from Ring of Honor Wrestling. Make sure you check out The Kevin Kelly Show each and every week. We'll be talking about wrestling in the past and wrestling today, plus be talking about all kinds of sports and pop culture, whatever's on your mind, too. We'll answer your questions each and every week. The Kevin Kelly Show, right here, placetobenation.com.
This is the king of old school, Steve Corino, and you've heard all the rumors, and it's true. The Steve Corino Show is here. We talk about wrestling. We talk about baseball, movies, television, anything you want to talk about. New guest every week. That's right. The Steve Corino Show every week here on the Place to Be Nation.
Hey, this is Bauer from The Bauer Show, sports and more. You can check out The Bauer Show podcast every Wednesday and Friday right here at placetobenation.com.
The Bauer Show.
Chad, do you hate it when commercials one and run?
What do you mean, Parv?
Oh, never mind.
Listen to Where the Big Boys Play on placetobenation.com and find us on iTunes. We are the only WCW Supercard exclusive podcast.
Greetings, friends. Ben Morse from Place to Be Nation's Main Event here. Tired of other podcasts constantly stuck in the past? Every other week, we give you a roundtable discussion of what's happening in wrestling today. Place to Be Nation's Main Event. We're holding everybody else down.
Looking for something different in your pro wrestling podcast? Look no further than the Pro Wrestling Super Show. Join me, Stephen Graham, every week as I'm joined by a rotating door of guests as we discuss a single topic each show, ranging from ECW pay-per-view reviews, wrestler snapshots, top six lists, and anything else you can think of. That's the Pro Wrestling Super Show every week here on the Place to Be Nation.
So you got the script, yeah? You all got it?
Yeah.
Oh, this sounds terrible. The Titans of Wrestling... Oh, brilliant. Sorry. The Titans of Wrestling are...
Pete, I'm a lead analyst for a show at Breakdown Matches.
Kelly, lead historian. I'm a jobber lover. Are you?
Johnny and I drink.
And yes, me, Bob. We watch old school wrestling and love it.
Titans of Wrestling.
You know you want to hear it.
What's going on? This is the Godfather, Nate Milton, with an offer you cannot refuse. Each and every week you can join Marcus Vanderberg, Big Nasty Alfred Kunawa, and myself on the Kings of Sport podcast, available exclusively on PlaceToBeNation.com, your one-stop spot for the best in sports and pop culture.
Hey, sports fans, this is Dr. G for Extra Point, Place to Be Nation's traditional sports talk podcast. Every episode, Scott Criscolo and I talk everything from the Big Four leagues to all the hot sports news with exclusive guests and analysts. Email us your comments and questions at extrapoint@placetobenation.com. That's the Extra Point, exclusively on placetobenation.com.
Hey, sports fans, Cowboy here. Make sure you make your weekly stop by the Sports Lounge here on placetobenation.com, where the boys and I tackle all the hot topics in the world of sports. We go behind the numbers and provide in-depth expert analysis on Major League Baseball, MMA, NFL, and more. The seats fill up quick, so grab your favorite cigar, kick back, and join us in the Sports Lounge, only on placetobenation.com.
In Rhode Island and looking for great food and a fun atmosphere, we'll be sure to stop by Bonehead's Wing Bar, 131 Washington Street in West Warwick, with over 65 different wing sauces and dozens of sandwiches, burgers, and appetizers. In a fully stocked bar, Bonehead's has something for everyone. Boneheads also shows every WWE and UFC pay-per-view, features live music, weekly trivia, and much, much more. So, be sure to stop in, tell Matt and the crew that Place to Be Nation sent you, and become a Bonehead today.
Hey, this is Rob Naylor. Do you still enjoy pro wrestling? Believe it or not, I still do. So you better join myself and Will on the Google Wrestling Podcast, exclusively at PlaceToBeNation.com.
Shit, I wasn't ready. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening and shit. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening to guys talk about old school wrestling, follow me and Charles on Wrestling with the Past podcast on Place to Be Nation.
On Richard and the Mailman, we talk about life with great enthusiasm, which eventually leads to disillusionment and inevitably hopelessness. But don't worry, there's lots of laughs along the way. So check us out every week or month or whatever on Richer and the Mailman.
What's up, wrestling fans? This is Jeff Peck, and you can check out my wrestling podcast, The Still Real to Us Show, every Saturday right here at PlaceToBeNation.com. It is a wrestling podcast from a fan's perspective, and we're not doing it in our mom's basement. So check it out every Saturday right here at PlaceToBeNation.com.
It's still real to me, damn it!
Looking for new wrestling, sports, and pop culture voices? Head over to PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. We have an extremely talented staff that covers comics, video games, and all facets of entertainment. Our sports coverage spans all the major professional and collegiate sports, including MMA. Our fresh takes on professional wrestling are some of the best on the internet. Also, be sure to check out our friends at thehistoryofwwe.com, prowrestlingonly.com, Scott Keith blog at rspwfaq.net, and piledriverwrestling.net.
This is J.J. Dillon, the leader of the Four Horsemen, and you're listening to Place to Be Podcast.
Get in the ring, jump, and let's thump. A couple of blows, and I'ma put you on your rump. Chop, chop, bam, then a left, right, left, and a kick, and a pin to the 1, 2, 3, then it's over with. So give that bell a whack, and I'ma put this man on his back, because when I'm in the ring, I'm a wrestling nightmare, straight from Georgia, and if you don't...
Is this, was this in Papagazzo's collection here?
People from the town to hear all about Place of Nation. Plenty of Dr. Good going around this weekend. So wrestling manager Listomania Scott pulled out. Remember you and I did this podcast a while back. It's now in written form. Yep. If you want to go back and check out our rankings, the all-time manager lists. You can check that out. We've talked plenty about the Extra Point that went up yesterday as well. You can listen to an hour and a half about who should wear what cap at Cooperstown in like 15 minutes of football. It's good stuff.
That's right.
You got a new episode of the Bauer Show as well, talking football, as well as a brand new football podcast, Scott. We'll have them here throughout the whole season. Our buddy Matt Ryan's got his panel of prognosticators. They talk all about the drug suspensions and the previewing week one and other kind of storylines that are coming this season. It's the new 22 Weeks podcast, so be sure to check that out here on the show. Matt Petticord had a SmackDown review, a new episode of the Still Real to Us Show podcast, talking about CM Punk. How basically the fallout of him leaving earlier in the year and where we go. They look back at it and kind of the fallout since. Ryan Everett had his main event review. Glenn Butler and Steve Willey had this week's high spot. Yours truly was involved in that, Scott. We talked about our Dirty F magazine memories since this was officially the last edition now. Has been in the books, so we talked about that. The Seinfeld rewatch continues. We had a couple new episodes go up last week. A new writer on board, Josephini, was a longtime fan, and he sent in a sample, and now he's here. He's going to be recapping all the Nitros for us off the network, but also be contributing in some other more modern wrestling stuff as well. So be sure to check out Joseph's piece on there. Very well done and entertaining. Episode 2 with TJ and Todd's Tailgate went up this weekend, talking about this weekend events in college football. Be sure you check that out each and every Friday morning. That'll be up for you. It's a quick, crisp, hour-long listen, not even. I think this was about 50 minutes, just previewing all the big games of the weekend by two guys that really, really know their college sports and their college football. We had a new episode of the main event last week. You guys looked at the pros and cons of the network and the product itself. A really cool debate and a very fast listen if you check that out. Our Vintage Vault refresh continues, Scott. We're going back in time. We started at WrestleMania 1. Now we did the Wrestling Classic. We are revisiting these shows. We're giving new thoughts, new fun facts, new information. If you liked our written reviews, if that's how you found us in the first place, we are refreshing those all for you. So check it out.
Yes.
The second round ended in the knockout round of the World Cup of TV characters. Tuning in this week for round 3 to kick off as well. And a new episode of the Kevin Kelly Show went up last week featuring ACH. It's an interesting interview in hindsight, considering what happened this past weekend. Kevin and I also talked about the nudie picture leak and many other things as well, so and get his takes on that. Pro Wrestling Super Show had a new episode. They broke down the career of Alberto Del Rio. Steven had Dave Musgrave and Jason Mann from WrestleSpective on. New episode of the Kings of Sport, and of course, the newest edition of the Movies of the P2B Generation, 1999, was up as well. So follow us on Facebook.com/PlaceToBeNation, Twitter, Place2BNation. You can hit us up at info@PlaceToBeNation.com if you want to submit us a sample for your writing or to stay howdy. So be sure to visit us each and every day as many times as you can, and feel free to contribute as you wish as well.
Absolutely. Yep. All right. Well done, JR, as always. Let's head back to Worcester.
Let's get the caravans together.
That's right.
Gypsies, tramps.
Tramps and thieves. Why don't you look up on Wiki, see if Cher ever played the Central.
I'm sure she did. I'm
sure she did. Any good bars near the Centrum, JR?
Yeah. Irish Times was right over there. The infamous all-you-can-eat fish and chips.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Ooh, gross.
Of course, the Palladium was over there as well. It's where ICP played many times. ECW was
shows.
There a couple times.
Yep. Good bands played there, too. Yep. All right. Speaking of good bands, the band was almost back together. Sadly.
Speaking of good bands.
A lot of music in this
all 70s
branching generations. Interesting little six-man soiree here, mushing together a myriad of feuds. Why don't you let us in?
Must I?
Yes.
So the night after WrestleMania, Chris Jericho and Booker T squared off in a match. Just over 2 minutes in, Ric Flair interfered in the match, and Triple H was right behind him. Jericho, Hunter, and Flair beat down Booker until Shawn Michaels made the save. The following week, Hunter and Jericho teamed up to take on Booker and Michaels. After Booker pinned Hunter to win the match, the heels attacked and a big beatdown occurred. Hurricane tried to make the save, but he was quickly swatted away. Just when all looked lost, Scott, Kevin Nash made a surprise return and lumbered his way down to the ring to run off the heels. From there became a running joke on the internet how long it took Nash to walk to the ring and how the heels had to basically hang around waiting for him to get there. And the next week, Nash came out and complained about the turmoil in the clique. Michaels and Hunter came out and each made their case to convince Nash to pick a side. The segment ended without Nash making his decision, but later that night, Booker and Hurricane defeated Triple H and Flair. When Hurricane pinned the game, thanks to an assist from Michaels, Nash came out to help Michaels, but they ended up hitting each other by accident, leading to some tension. A week later, Booker took on Hunter in a world title rematch with Michaels as the guest ref. Flair and Jericho would interfere to end the match in a schmoz. The show ended with Hunter, Michaels, and Nash arguing in the ring before Hunter hit Nash from behind to end the soap opera. I mean, doesn't that make Nash look stupid immediately as well? Like, oh, I can't decide. Okay, Triple H just hits you with a low blow and now you're face. Like, again, he can't even just, like, no one can just get over on it. You know what I'm saying? It's like he's got to make the decision.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if he's trying to put over the heel persona, is that much of an asshole, but I mean,
it's
this
stupid. I mean, no, Nash should have turned on him. It made him look like a pussy. Yeah, it probably could have. Oh, no one wanted to see it go longer.
Let's put it this way. What? I would have waited. You know what I would have done?
Oh, God. I can only imagine.
I would have had the click. I would have made the six-man tag Sean, Nash, and Hunter against keep Flair out of it and have Booker, Jericho.
Oh, why? So that'd be even more of a squash.
And then, no, but.
Okay, put, throw Kane in there. Throw them all in. Let Hunter pin them all again. It could be an elimination tag.
Could we bring back Razor? It'd be great. Could we bring back.
Hunter eliminates them all. That's what we could do. Yes. So let me just clean up the Nash stuff. So he was last seen on July 8th, where he tore his quad running down during a tag match. He was forced to the sidelines, been rehabbing since. On the April 7th Raw, that's when Nash made his return. Rumors have been swirling he'd actually be coming back as Diesel with his hair dyed black, but he did not. Just yet, anyway. On 4/12, of course, there was his return. 309 days was his first in-ring action. That's how long it had been. 44 weeks, 10 months.
Boy, you could tell.
Shawn Michaels returned to the house show circuit, Scott, for the first time in 5 years, worked his first house show match during this time. Wow. And this is when he started to realize he was starting to commit a bit more to a full schedule, at least doing a couple house shows here or there still. Nash, yeah. So do you want to run down the whole match, by the way? We haven't done that yet. What the match actually is?
Yes, the match is Triple H.
Time to play the game! It's amazing how you knock me off my feet. I won't
Okay. Well,
Ric Flair. He already played a Baby Gib, and then Chris Jericho taking on Kevin Nash, Shawn Michaels, and Booker T. No, what a great match. Think about it. Nash, Shawn, and Triple H as they try. You know, Nash wants to repair the click, taking on Booker, Jericho, and Steiner. And you could have just finished them all off again. You could have had an 8-man tag. You could have put Flair on one side and Kane on the other. No, I'm only kidding. But you're saying, in all seriousness, you're talking about extending this a little bit. That would have been kind of a cool psychology thing to tell Triple H, look, why don't we try this? Come on, guys. Enough of this pansying around. It's all about the stupid belt.
Go ahead. You need theme music and, for this fanfic.
And, you know, it's all about the stupid title. Let's be the band.
And then
the
Hunter comes
together.
In wearing this nice suit pants set.
Suit pants.
That I bought him at Lane Bryant.
Lane Bryant!
Or I guess he'd buy you the one at Lane Bryant.
Is he Akeem? You mean I wear something at Lane Bryant?
Hey, Chris Gola, I bought you this at Lane Bryant.
I don't need elastic. What, am I going to eat onions and tuna fish? So, But you're the one who said that you didn't give it a chance to grow. You know,
I got you these plus size mesh pants. Put them on, Chris Cola.
Plus size. What is it, expect discount? You buy this at Benny's?
I got these in the maternity section. I like when you wear baggy clothes.
Makes me look thinner. No, nothing could be any thinner. He's really in the roid fix at this point. We're trying to keep this as funny as
you're
possible.
Skinny enough, Hunter. I know, Chris Golo. Now shut up and put that bra on. I got it in the discount bin.
You know, I think you did a percent job.
I earned you your points, too. Don't worry. I used your card. Your Lane Bryant card.
We're trying to keep this as funny as possible because this match is just unwatchable.
More like a Lane Bryant. Am I right, Chris Golo?
More like a Lane Bryant. Elaine Bryant is
lame.
That?
Lame Bryant.
I know. The way you said that, Elaine. Let's have a little Elaine. Is she going to win the World Cup of TV characters?
It doesn't matter, Chris Golo. You're the only man for me.
Put on this jumpsuit.
Put these stockings on.
I like overalls.
Get that garter belt.
Oh, gross. All right. So
actually, don't. I'm the only man that can have a belt in this family.
Yeah. Something that's even creepier than this entire soliloquy is what is up with Triple H's hair in this match? It's like, I understand he wants to like mimic
a lot of humidity in that apartment, Chris Golo.
There's no air conditioning.
My hair doesn't dry well when I exit the shower at your apartment. Very humid.
The air conditioning's bad at the Centrum. Well,
forget that. To me, what was worse was Nash's Raw return, though. I was like underselling it, how awful it was. He legit lumbers out. I mean, he's just like stumbling to the ring, and they're all standing there like watching him like a ghost is appearing. It was a really bad choice. I mean, I don't understand this choice at all. Made zero sense to me. I feel like you had so many young, fresh, legit contenders, and you bring this retread out and make him your top face on Raw.
Yeah. I think it's this return that really tells you the difference in the two shows.
What is in the product? Ugh. All right. Let's talk about the match. So Michaels gets more regular work in, as we mentioned. Hunter made Nash choose and then hit him in the balls like he does all his friends. Nash put push shit on immediately. It's good that Booker's still in the mix, at least, at the very least. Pretty strong teams overall. Weird seeing Hunter and Jericho work together. Nash getting the final entrance when he was the third most over guy on the team is the biggest joke of all, right? I mean, I'd say he's maybe the fifth most over guy in the match, only in front of Hunter. Would you agree with that?
Nash?
Yeah.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Heading into, like, of all the entrances, right? Michaels is more over. Booker is more over. Jericho is more over.
Yeah.
Flair's moreover.
Jerry, it's funny though. Triple H always gets these faint face pops every once in a while. Maybe it depends on the opponent, but this was just such a throwaway. This is like, all right, we got to get these six guys in. We need to get Hunter on the show. We need to, you know, get the storyline building when we get to Judgment Day and we get to Bad Blood, you know, whatever, and move on for the next couple months. So it was really
awful.
Oh, awful. Yeah. And this match is just dreadful.
And then we waste no time. We go to Michaels and Jericho going right at it. The crowd all behind Jericho. Nash cleans house. Hunter's kind of playing it as weary and a bit nervous. But he's kind of booked as a pussy in this run, too, I realized. Mm-hmm. When you watch all these matches, I mean, really like a pussy. Like, he's always running, mm-hmm. which is weird for him because he's always, of course, put over more as a...
aggressive badass. Yeah.
So Booker's still working hard and looking good. It feels like a match to kind of move him out of the picture, though. It's kind of like, okay, thanks for coming. See you later. Cool brief tease of a Flair-Michaels match. Michaels and Booker way more over and crisp than the lumbering Nash, who just looked aged and dated out there. Michaels, I thought, was a good choice for the heat segment. Flair is good in this role where he can slip in and wrestle and be believable when needed and otherwise just work on the outside. Nash slow and choppy in his comeback. He messes up the flow completely. It should have been clear here that he didn't have what it took to start doing main event singles matches. I mean, they should have aborted, I thought, immediately after this match when they saw him out there. Booker looks great, but he feels like an afterthought. I thought he looked the best in this whole match, and
he
felt like nothing. Jericho gets a good solid showing despite his teammates. Nash and Hunter fight up the aisle. You get this awful, brutal ref bump. Nash is just a mess. He like stumbles into him and knocks him over.
I know, yeah, it was pretty bad.
A really bad sledgehammer shot, too. And then they pin Nash, which makes zero sense. Because how are you supposed to believe him as a contender when Hunter already beat him in a six-man? You have all these other guys in there to take the pin. I mean, you have fucking Booker in there anyway. You're jobbing him out. Why not just pin him again? Just let Jericho pin him or something. And I thought the match... See, I know you said the match sucked. I thought it was good. Other than when Nash was in and the booking at the end. Like, I thought when it was Flair and Jericho against Booker and Shawn was awesome. And if it was just that as a tag match, it would have been a killer match. Like, I thought those four worked really hard and real well together. But Hunter and Nash were just an albatross in this.
Yeah, maybe I was expecting, I was hoping for more. I didn't really remember this match that much.
Good. It was good when they were in. And I thought it would have had potential without your two championship match guys, sadly.
I know.
I mean, to me, this is where you really start to feel it for the first time. It's like you look at this and you're like, you know, shit, you have these four other guys that would all be way better as champion and top contender. And the two worst guys, most heatless guys in the match are the ones that you're going to be running on top.
I think a lot of it has to do with our next match. I'm gonna lean on that for a while. I think that's
why
I think having
to
rush
Nash,
all these guys.
I'm not even saying the other guys have to win, but Nash is just so just done. He's just done. Cooked.
Would you have scrapped this and given Booker a rematch?
Yeah, I mean, I would have been hesitant to beat him again. Honestly, I would have had Nash come out next night. I wouldn't have done all the happy horse shit with the click. I just would have had Nash jump him. I would have burnt through this in one show. And I would have done that tag match. And then you find a new contender for Judgment Day that we'll talk about. Because there was one that they could have easily done. We'll get to, but...
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a mess. And we deal with this for the next couple of shows. Although, I think one of the matches isn't that bad. I mean, one match is dreadful. But we'll get into that over the next couple of vaults. I thought the decision was aggravating. I mean... Did they heels really have to win this match?
No.
Did Jericho have to knock Nash out? I mean,
that was the worst part to me. It's not even that the heels won. It's that Nash
already looks like a goof, you know?
He looked awful in the match, and then he gets pinned. So what's the freaking point?
Yeah. Cheating or no cheating, did it even matter? The fact that he got hit with a sledge, does that even make a difference? No, it doesn't.
No.
No, it was stupid. Absolutely stupid.
And then to watch this and run two more months.
Mm-hmm.
Of that match on top is, I mean, I don't know what they're thinking. It was just brutal.
Yeah.
Brutal stuff.
But I think a lot of it, again, and no, I'm not going to harp on it. I think the point I'm trying to make is regardless of who they, time was the problem because they needed to get to, you know, the end game, no pun intended, but maybe they could have.
I'll show you my end game, Chris Golo.
Oh, no, no more stretchy pants. But the problem is who they were utilizing in these positions.
Miss, this price tag says $8.99 on this garter belt. Why are you charging me $10.99?
You're Triple H.
Damn straight I am.
I like your hair. Yeah, it was just not. It wasn't good in that aspect.
I'd like to buy these slacks. Do you have them in a
slacks?
I'd like to buy these corduroys.
I'd like to pick up these slacks for my man.
Oh, Ric Flair.
The idea of Hunter bargain shopping in a mall for you, it's like the ultimate. Like, that should be a video on the website.
Oh, my God.
Cartoon of Hunter just bargain shopping for you.
Oh, man.
I'm having a Brookstone next.
Brookstone. Get him that massage mattress.
Chris Golo, I've worked up quite the appetite. What do you say we head over to Auntie Anne's and get a pretzel? I got a coupon. Buy one, get one free.
Auntie Anne's.
We'll grab a lemonade.
Aw, come on. I want Cinnabon.
And then we'll listen to this guy play the piano while I throw pennies in the fountain.
Sounds like an episode of that, what's that cartoon, Slam City or whatever.
This week on Slam City, Hunter and Scotty go to the mall. Griscolo, I got to stop at KB Toys and get a wrestling figure for my nephew.
Okay. Do you want something from Orange Julius?
We're headed over to Hallmark. I got to get some cards. I got this 3-for-1 deal. You get a free stuffed animal.
I like how you just put the New Hampshire accent. I'm going to get some cards. I'm
going to get some cards for you, Chris Golo. I got Mother's Day's coming up.
All right. So there you go. Heels win. Match is, I can't believe you liked it more than I did. I think the ending ruined it for me, but all right. Time for the main event. And it does seem like a very out of place seems like a very out of place main event for a secondary show.
It does.
But
overall, it felt weird.
But we got to do it. It's there. So
obviously.
It's there, and they booked it because somebody had to leave. So the first guy we'll talk about is The Rock, who, of course, defeated Steve Austin, finally, at WrestleMania 19. And where did he go from here, JR?
He went all over the place. After finally defeating Steve Austin at WrestleMania, Rock decided to hold Rock Appreciation Night the next night. At the end of the show, Rock came out, aired a video tribute to himself, declared he no longer had any challenges left to wrestling, and was calling it a career. Before he could retire, Goldberg made his long-awaited WWE debut. He hit the ring, told Rock that he was next, dropped him with a spear. The next week, after Rock defeated Jeff Hardy, he called Goldberg to the ring. Rock decreed that a match between himself and Goldberg would be the biggest of all time, baby. But he was declining the offer. Christian then jumped Goldberg from behind, but Goldberg took him out. Rock tried to attack as well, but Goldberg fought him off as well. Rock had recently endorsed Christian as his favorite superstar, and Christian vowed to change his career around. We'll cover that next month.
Mm-hmm.
On the 4/14 Raw, Goldberg competed in his first WWE match, defeating Christian by disqualification. Off to a good start. Finally, on the 4/21 Raw, Rock decided to hold the Rock Concert 2. Of course, he had held the first one before WrestleMania. Rock would sing some songs and bring out the legendary Goldberg for a quick laugh. The real Goldberg arrived just on time to set things straight. Rock called out security to protect him and Goldberg, who Rock says must be in trouble for impersonating Goldberg all these years. Goldberg took out security, and Rock ran off. Goldberg beat up the guards and Goldberg, but Rock came in and took him out with a rock bottom to set up the match. Before we get to Goldberg's history, Scott, what did you think of this initial booking of him?
I wouldn't have had a match with anybody.
Right. And I wouldn't have had the match. Even worse off, only win by DQ.
Yeah, no, he should have destroyed Christian if you're going to put him in a match. Otherwise, I wouldn't have put him in a match before now. Absolutely not. He gets hit with some chair shots from Rock at one point. I think it might have been that after the Rock concert, too. It just didn't fit. He needed to be dominant. But again, not a WWE guy. Vince's reminder of the Monday Night War, he wanted to, you know, you're in my realm now, kid. So I don't think you're going to see the WCW Goldberg. Was it cool to see him? Yeah, absolutely was cool to see him. I was very excited. It's kind of neat to see him. My roommate, I remember, got pumped when we were watching it in the apartment. But yeah, I wouldn't have put him in a match with anybody. I would have just had him wait around and kind of stalk Raw and stalk the arenas. And then
no, they only had one more only 1 week they would have had to get through. He only had one match. So
yeah, exactly.
Didn't have to change much of the booking. All right, so Bill Goldberg, former pro football player that was gobbled up by WCW, sent to the power plant after being cut by the Falcons in 1995. Goldberg debuted in late 97, drew many comparisons to Steve Austin due to his look, began racking up wins and doing so in impressive fashion, would quickly squash his foes and put them away with a spear-jackhammer combination. That's what I used on you, Costner Scolo. Soon the announcers began hyping his undefeated streak, and the fans began buying into it. Goldberg first struck gold by defeating Raven for the U.S. title in the 4/20/98 Nitro, continued to roll, and eventually earned a World Heavyweight Championship match with Hollywood Hogan on July 6th, emanating from the Georgia Dome, and Goldberg took out Hogan and took the title and kept his winning streak alive. The Georgia Dome fans popped big time for that win, and many pundits wondered why the match wasn't saved for pay-per-view, and some considered decisions like that to be part of their downfall. I disagree. Despite this most popular star being the most popular star in the promotion and his top champion, Goldberg's title feud were often downplayed and playing second fiddle to Hogan's antics. Finally, a Starcade, head booker Kevin Nash defeated Goldberg to end the streak and take the title, and things would never be the same. On the infamous 1/4/99 Nitro, Goldberg was supposed to receive a rematch, but a convoluted angle with the NWO Miss Elizabeth unfolded, and Bill was taken to jail. Tried to stalk her in the Ibaka gym, as you may have heard back in the day when me and Chad Campbell reviewed those Raws and Nitros there.
Mm-hmm.
Later that night, Nash laid down for Hogan, handed the title over with the now legendary finger poke of doom. Goldberg's momentum really slowed up and ended up bouncing from feud to feud throughout 1999. At the end of the year, he took on Bret Hart at Starcade, but during the match, he hit Hart with a stiff superkick, tearing a hole in Hart's neck and giving him a concussion that ended the Hitman's career. A few weeks later, Goldberg was also on the shelf as he punched out the window of a limo and sliced his forearm up with a nasty injury. Goldberg returned in May, but by that point, WCW was nearing its end. New booker Vince Russo had Goldberg do an ill-advised heel turn that nobody wanted to see. That was quickly aborted. Goldberg turned face to feud with Russo. Vince told him he needed to start a new undefeated streak, and if he lost the match, he'd be fired. His streak and career ended at the Sin pay-per-view. When he and trainer Dwayne Bruce lost a tag match to Lex Luger and Buff Bagwell, the idea that Goldberg would take time off, have minor shoulder surgery, before returning with a huge push. Unfortunately, when he was on the sidelines, WCW closed up shop.
His contract was not picked up by WWF, so he sat on the sidelines collecting money until it ended. During his time in WCW, Goldberg only lost 6 matches, Scott. Do you have them in front of you?
I do.
Okay. It was 3 to Bret Hart, 1 to Kevin Nash, 1 to Scott Steiner, and 1 to Booker T. Throughout 2002 and early 2003, Goldberg had some success in Japan before finally giving WWE a shot. Rock had been campaigning to bring Goldberg in and offered to put him over before leaving. The first Goldberg vignette aired at WrestleMania, as we mentioned before. So, yes, at college he played for the Georgia Bulldogs in 1989, had some decent stats in 87-89. He was drafted by the Rams in the 11th round in 1990. Played in Canada. Played for Sacramento Surge and Sacramento Gold Miners. Was that Arena League?
I would think so.
Okay.
Can't see it being anything else. Minor league?
Or was it that?
Must be Arena Football.
Yeah. I played for the Falcons for a year and the Panthers in 1995. Tore his lower abdomen and retired. Former Triple Crown winner in WCW. Returned his first match back, actually, after that retirement match at Sin, was 8:30:02 for All Japan. Was in a bunch of movies in between as well. So that is your Goldberg package there. So about time they brought him in, right? I mean, it was going to happen at some point. It seemed like he was putting it off a little bit. And another guy here as they try to salvage the promotion that's quickly on the downswing. They had all these guys initially, or had a chance at all these guys, if you remember initially, but we get many of them here in the months afterwards.
It was actually the WLAF, the World League of American Football.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, the Sacramento Surge. And they became the Sacramento Gold Miner, so it was the same team.
Okay.
So there you go.
There's the big transition.
Yes. Let's see if the roster's there. Let's see. Defensive lineman. What was he? Offensive? Was he again?
He played defense, didn't he? Wasn't he like a, I don't know.
Defensive lineman. No, I don't see his name on the, I don't see his name on the 1991 roster. So 1992. Here we go. Is he on the 1992 roster?
Yeah, 92 he played. 92, 93, 94 he was there.
Let's see. Defensive lineman. Nope, I don't see him here.
Oh, well.
Oh, well.
So Goldberg comes in, and as I mentioned, Rock had offered to put him over on his way out the door, Scott, because his run is now done. After Backlash, Rock finally hung up his boots as a part-time competitor, as the lure of Hollywood was just too much. It was clear that Rock was quickly becoming a major movie star that could command some massive salaries. He'll pop up from time to time and compete in a match a year later, and then that would be it for a while. This is the swan song for him. Selfless star that he was, looked up at the lights one final time. Many consider 03 his finest run, of course, with the heel Hollywood stuff. 2000 was probably his biggest year overall in the business, top dog in the promotion, in the promotion's most visible year since 85. It was his dominance that year that led to the movie deals and mainstream notoriety. Mm-hmm. His career was an interesting one, lauded as a blue-chip, can't-miss prospect. Looked like a bust by early 97. Injury and heel turn saved him. The Rock was born, never looked back. Made them millions of dollars, and now is a mega, mega Hollywood star. Obviously in a bit of a better position now with the company than he was shortly after the show. Sad at the time. I was really upset that Rock left again. Mm-hmm. He had gotten so good in the heel run, and it's just like, it felt like such a blow because, you know, Austin's done, we talked about. Angle's hurt. Hogan had been done. He's back, but he's really not anything much of a megastar at this point. So, I mean, not having Rock around felt like another big blow.
Yeah. It's as great as WrestleMania 19 was, and we saw all these unbelievable superstars, it was the epilogue of the Attitude Era, because here they're all even. Austin's body can't handle it. Rock wants to make more money and safer money in Hollywood. And that's why you had to bring in Goldberg. That's why you had to bring in Nash, sadly, and to fill these gaps. On a side note, JR, you know who was on that Sacramento Surge roster? A guy by the name of Mike Jones.
Virgil?
Remember who Mike Jones was?
Virgil.
No.
The rapper, Mike Jones. Mike Jones?
No. Mike Jones that tackled Kevin Dyson in Super Bowl 34 to preserve the Rams' victory. Anyway.
Yes.
Who cares? I think they were very desperate here. They were in kind of a chasm of talent.
Yeah.
A big gap. And trying to fill it with the best thing they could, cheaper. I mean, clearly Kevin Nash isn't making the money he was making at WCW, that's for sure. Frankly, probably neither is Goldberg, although he probably got a lot of incentives. I miss Rock. I really do.
Hmm.
I think we were so used to them being on TV over these last, you know, 4.5, 5 years.
Did you think he was gone for good? I mean, I'm trying to remember the rumors at the time.
I kind of thought he was.
I think they kind of said it, and it was one of those I didn't want to believe. Like, I'm like, nah, he'll be back for a quick run at SummerSlam, and then again from, you know, it seemed like he'd pop in at least twice a year for a month or so. But SummerSlam would come and go, and he would not be there. So very sad, and a lot of movies. And, I mean, good for him. I mean, sad for us as fans. Good for him to get out how he could and make a lot of money. So
we didn't do his final record. I think we did it at... Do we do it when he comes back?
We yeah, we might back. Have because he yeah. comes back in a year. So awesome, yeah. Of course, this awesome run is so short-lived. Goldberg had to happen at some point. Like we said, a good time to come in with the empty main event scene. A really big match for Backlash. For some reason, in Rock, he has a good hyper-promo on the way out the door, like a good classic Rock. He's just going crazy. And for some reason, it really made me laugh in an absurd way. He calls Terry Giggle Panties, which made me laugh.
Yeah, it almost like he was cutting a face promo.
I don't think he gave a shit at this point. He's like, whatever. No. I'm going to put this guy over and get the fuck out of here. But
he was saying, like, what did he call him?
Whisker Biscuit.
Whisker Biscuit. Whisker Biscuit loving bitch.
Giggle Panties. That's what your nickname is, Criscolo Giggle Panties. speaking of panties, I got these for you. They're in the bag. Go check them out. I'm going to be making dinner. So how much later do you think Goldberg could have debuted and still been relevant? Were we close to that point?
Well, I mean, WCW had been gone for 2 years at this point.
Right, so how much further out could we have gone and still made him?
Maybe one more year. I think if he wasn't debuting by like the end of 04 into 05, I think nobody cared. I don't think anybody would care. Because by then you would have had a jacked roster of your own guys. And I mean,
this is a good time for it to come, right? I mean, there's nothing else.
No, absolutely it is. And look, he's unlike the guys in the Invasion, who for the most part were either jobbers or guys that were in the WWF before. Goldberg was the face. Not Hogan, maybe Bischoff. Goldberg was the face of WCW during the Monday Night War. Not Hogan. Well, I guess to a certain extent. But in terms of pure, Hogan was a turncoat in a lot of people's eyes, a traitor to the WWE. But Goldberg was the face of WCW. He was the guy. He was bred there. You know, it was his company. And on the other side of the coin, Rock is pretty much the face of WWE only because he was bred in WWE. Austin came from WCW and ECW. So you're talking about a purebred WCW guy versus a purebred WWE guy. Mm-hmm. It's like Bernie Williams for the Yankees. We talked about that on the Extra Point. We were talking about, you know, Yankees and the purebred guys and how Bernie's beloved because of that. I think Rock is in that same boat. Almost slightly more than Austin if you look at it from a purist viewpoint, because again, Austin came from a W. Not that that mattered. People loved him anyway. But my point is, this is how pure the final nail or the final chapter of what would be the Monday Night War is here, because you have the purebred WCW guy in Goldberg and the purebred WWE guy in Rock. And you needed something because the rest of the show was...
Yeah, I mean, they built it okay, but this was clearly the selling point, the feature here to get Goldberg established. So crowd seems more into Rock than Goldberg here. Goldberg still has his presence, and it's crazy that, you know, would you have thought a couple of years before Rock would have gotten the Hogan and Goldberg matches and not Steve Austin?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Right? Pretty surprising.
I think that breaks Steve's heart, that his body just couldn't do it.
That Rock gets both these big matches that you would have pegged for Austin. Weird calling hearing Coach call a big moment like this. Like, it felt a little odd not hearing JR call this match.
Yeah, and you could tell that now that they were a little more permanent, Coach and Jerry were... They weren't... Coach wasn't being as babyface defensive. He was kind of letting Lawler kind of walk on him a little bit. He wasn't really being very defending of the babyfaces, but... overall, I don't think the match was that bad from an announcer's viewpoint. The match itself is not horrendous. Mm-hmm. It was about as good as you were going to make it. Rock wasn't going to really hurt himself as he was heading off. And Goldberg, you know, was obviously set for big things. So, I mean, I think it was evident, regardless of what you read on the internet. If you were totally a Mac and didn't read anything, you knew that he was the end game.
Yeah.
For Triple H. I don't think there was any question about that.
Oh, yeah. It was
the guy that was eventually going to be the next World Heavyweight Champion.
It was clear. So
he needed to win this match. You kind of knew he was anyway.
Oh, yeah.
But it was to be good.
It was really obvious. They got off to a slow start. Lots of stalling from The Rock. I thought Rock was really working hard here character-wise, in the match.
Yep.
Goldberg gets a Rock bottom. Rock dodges a spear. Goldberg hits a post, and that turns a tide.
Rock gets one last shitty sharpshooter in before he leaves.
I know, yeah.
Rock survives a spear. Rock is turning the crowd by being so awesome, I thought. Hits a spinebuster and an awesome kip up. And he must have been torn, though, because he's probably feeling like he wanted to give his fans like one last great showing before he leaves. And on the flip side, he wanted to help put Goldberg over. So it was a real tough spot for him working in this heel run. Goldberg survives a rock bottom. The crowd's completely turned by this point. Third spear and jackhammer finishes, and the crowd booed Goldberg right up until the finish, and then they popped a bit for the three count. I thought it was underwhelming, but you couldn't really squash Rock, and you give Goldberg early cred, but not really. It didn't feel epic. It felt like just a quick like torch passing, like, all right, we're going to get this out of the way, and then we can start the real Goldberg push. Like, And Coach on play-by-play, he was fine, but he didn't have that urgency that JR probably would have had. He's still kind of green, so that didn't help. It feel like JR would have been. Remember we talked about JR at No Way Out, how he was almost overselling Austin's return. We could have used a little bit of that here to make it feel like a bigger deal.
Yes,
it almost feels like just another match. It almost feels like Sean Mooney calling a Coliseum video. Like that's what it felt like with Coach here. Like he was dubbed in, just calling a match from the studio. But it was fine. Again, though, it didn't feel like an epic. And I don't know if it's because of the arena, because of what show it was, because we all knew Rock was losing, and it felt like a formality. And again, it felt like we had to just get through this so we could actually start Goldberg's real push. And that's what it felt like to me.
No, I agree. This definitely was... This is almost like Cole at, say, Rumble 99 or even St. Valentine's Day Massacre, where he was, you know, slightly over his head a little bit with the moment. Although he kind of goes overboard and starts screaming and freaking out. Coach is the opposite. He's almost, you know, I think it's almost like the sports announcer in him. He's very low-key, very straight-laced, and let the color guy do it. But Lawler's not that kind of guy.
Right. No, he needed to be really – at the end of the match, he needed to really be selling Goldberg as, oh, my God, this guy – beat the Rock. Like, he just pinned the Rock clean. The Rock just beat Steve Austin at WrestleMania, and Goldberg just beat him clean in 13 minutes.
Yeah.
Like, we didn't, if you're going to put him over, like, beating the Rock is big, but you got to sell it like a big deal. They didn't sell it like a big deal. Like, holy shit, he just beat the Rock. The Rock doesn't lose that many matches on, you know, big matches on pay-per-view, especially recently. Like, that was a big win for him. And I didn't feel like they completely sold it that way. So I feel like Goldberg's already kind of been put behind the eight ball between the first few weeks of booking and, like, I get the whole idea of having to put him over a star to build cred, but I feel like Goldberg had that cred already. Do you agree?
Of course he did. But beating Rock didn't hurt. It just wasn't done properly. I wouldn't have squashed Rock, not by any stretch.
You can't squash Rock. That's the problem. So it's like, it's almost like a no win for Goldberg. I almost feel like they shouldn't have started this big for him. Like, Goldberg was there to stay. Did they need a dream match for him out of the gate? Wouldn't it almost been better off?
I think they did it to sell this show because they had a dumpster fire before it.
It almost feels like they would have been better off almost having Goldberg and Rock team up or something. And pass the torch that way, you know?
I would have even skipped the Nash nonsense and maybe have Goldberg Rock against Triple H and Flair.
You need to do something.
Get that ball rolling that quickly.
Because even then Goldberg would have had a sell. My point is you want something where Goldberg could run through a guy here. Like, build him up through the card and get him ready for the title.
I got a good idea. How about Test?
Yeah, anyone. Like, just do that. Like, it probably would have made more sense. Like, I didn't feel like you needed the dream match yet with Goldberg. He just came in, let him build his way up quick, let him rip off some big wins. Like, having to sell for, you know, 10 minutes to Rock just didn't make a lot of sense. And he just...
Sadly, JR, we're looking at it from a creative perspective. I think it was obviously totally a business decision because... Most of this 0.67 buy rate was to watch this match. Otherwise, it would have been like 0.17.
No, obviously. Well, you could have done something else. Maybe you could have found something else for Rock to do, too. But I don't know if he sticks around if it's not a Goldberg match in there. So it's all moot anyway. But anyway. So, show overall is fine. I mean, nothing great. There were no real great matches. There were nothing.
Yeah, I don't know if this is... Yeah, I don't know if there's anything you could throw in. I don't know if you could be like, you know, I'm kind of in the mood to watch Backlash 03.
I mean, there's no, like, turd match. Like, nothing really sucked. But there was nothing really...
No.
Nothing really worth.
If there's
watching.
Any match you're interested in, based on maybe what we're watching at this modern day, if you want to throw in that Brock Cena match, it's not bad. It's unique. It's interesting to wrap your head around that as we head towards, you know, what we just saw at this past SummerSlam and what we're going to be getting in a couple weeks at Night of Champions. Might be interesting to watch this match. See if you get some kind of weird perspective. No harm in that. You can watch a six-man tag just for comedy purposes.
But you could definitely feel the air coming out of the promotion with this show.
I think you can feel the air coming out of Raw with this show. I think SmackDown's okay.
Yeah, but you go, I mean, just...
All right, well, let me ask you this. Does the splitting of the promotion splits, and then, of course, we end up getting to the show splits, which we'll delve more into in a few weeks. Does that help you realize that the problem is not the promotion as a whole, but it's really Raw that's a problem?
No, because you still get a lot of weird things on SmackDown, too. To me, it's just a lack of stars overall. It's not the talent. The talent's still there. Mm-hmm. It goes from feeling like a mega show back to, like, I don't want to say that, like, 96-ish, but I feel like you're back into this hole of WWF. And for a while, it was like WWF. Like, it was, I feel like you can finally feel the thud that it's fallen out of the pop culture sky for good. Like, it's hit the ground now. That's it. Mm-hmm. That's my point I'm trying to make. Like, it doesn't feel like that mainstream pop culture spectacle mm-hmm. that it's felt like for the last.
Well, because the mainstream pop culture spectacle guys.
Right.
Are gone.
That's what I'm trying to say. So it feels like it's over now. Like, since 98, this promotion has been in the spotlight. It's been, people talked about it, and it sure dipped people a little bit in 01-02. You know,
backpacks and folders and, you know, t-shirts and stickers and all this, you know, the figures, kids talking about it at school the next day, that's gone.
And 01 and 02, it was dipping already, but to me here now, it really feels like we are empty on star power.
We're stuck to the diehard.
Crossover star power, that matter. And even though Austin comes back a little bit, it's not the same. Nope. Like, no one's still clamoring for Stone Cold.
Not as a non-worker, you know, not as a non-wrestler. And I think the other problem is these WCW guys, they're not bankable. I think people are over. I think the pop culture is over Goldberg. They don't care anymore.
I don't know if they ever really cared.
Well, you could blame the NWO for that, but that's entirely true too, you know. But anyway, I don't think WCW cared about as much about the pop culture. I think they just wanted to bury WWE. I don't think they cared about any of the collateral
damage. Well, no, the NWO was pop. I mean, that crossed over. I feel like WCW in general was big, but I don't think Goldberg was. I don't think Goldberg was there yet.
They always treated him like a surprise, glorified mid-carder. Let's be honest. He wasn't promoted as a main event guy until that night at the Georgia Dome. And then, bingo, there he is, main event guy. You know? And I think, I just don't think the company knew how to market him. Yeah, he had the Who's Next shirts and, you know, there were signs and everything. But you didn't see a lot of Goldberg stuff.
No, he wasn't a big mainstream guy.
You saw Austin stuff all over the place.
I think the problem is by the time he rose, WCW was fading in the mainstream. Like, the NWO stuff was still kind of hot. You'd see the stickers and the pictures and the posters. Right. But I feel like by the time Goldberg was the guy, everyone was locked in on Austin. Mm-hmm. It's pretty fun. The Lions, a little bit of fun fact here. The Lions have the William Clay Ford patch on their jersey, so it says WCF in white lettering. Anyway, made me laugh.
Do they all have Elizabeth Madison disease?
Yes, they all do. Before we wrap, Scott, I wanted to read a quick email from our buddy Michael Cook, a fan of the show. Had written in a nice email about his experience at WrestleMania 19 and the Raw the night after. We didn't have time, obviously, at Mania, so I'm going to read it really quick here. He joined us on episode 9. He's been hooked ever since. He loves what we do, and hopefully he wants to get in on the next trivia contest. It was a great atmosphere. I stood in line for an hour and a half to get in, and even back then, everyone outside was doing the flare woo almost the whole time. I sat in left field, 20 rows from the entrance ramp. We had a clear view of the ring, but being so far away, it was tough to see everything, but there were plenty of screens to watch. However, the ramp, we could see very well. As far as Thunder Night Heat, it was an okay match, but everyone knew who was going to win. Crowd was nuts for RVD and Kane. Seeing Team 3D turn was totally unexpected. I think everyone was confused when they showed the whole Nathan Jones FBI angle. A nice pop for Ray. Great match. I wanted Ray to win, but Hardy had to. Awesome gimmick. Despite what people thought, Limp Bizkit was over with Roland because everyone knew what was coming. Nathan Jones looked like he had no clue. Even from the rafters, you could see him whiff on his kicks. After watching it last week for the first time on TV, it's hilarious how much Taker is swearing throughout the match. Women's match was awesome. What made it better was coming home, get back home from Seattle. I got to sit next to Trish on my way to my layover to Milwaukee. Ooh, that's cool. Rock a boo during his interview until, of course, his catchphrases. Benoit and Rhino were crazy over. Benoit's chops were vicious, and we could hear them clear up in the up in the seats they were in. Not much else I can say about HBK and Jericho that hasn't been said. Crowd was so into everything. Scary to think that arguably that match could be ranked anywhere from third to fifth best on the card. And I have no idea why people were laughing at during Shawn's entrance, but now I know, with the confetti guns fucking up. The crowd erupted in Goldberg chants. Every time we could, we chanted. Miller Lite Catfight Girls sucked. Even the guys were booing or getting drinks or pissing. Another great match between Hunter and Booker, but sorry, Scott, Booker should have won. Dare I say the next match had the biggest pop of the night due to Piper. The place came unglued. I could tell you, though, you could hear some boos where he hit Hogan. Everyone in my section loved it. Thought more was going to happen when Shane came down. Another great match. Three Rock Bottoms, what a match as well. Rock was so awesome, and the huge boos when he put on the jacket. At the time, we had no clue that Austin was retiring. Huge standing ovation when Austin left. From what I thought, Brock was dead. Holy cow, I thought he had no idea how he got up that far away, and it looked brutal. You could tell after the match he knocked himself out. He had no clue. When Angle pinned him, I'm sure he was telling Brock to end it. Hell of a match, 5 stars. Raw the next night, it wasn't the Woos, it was Goldberg all night long. Great seats, middle of the ring, first row on the second level. Pretty good Raw, and yes, the crowd bit and actually thought the Hurricane may win. Great to see RVD and Kane win. Let me tell you, Kane's pyro is freaking hot. I've been to at least 10 to 12 Raws and SmackDowns, including the one that I've had Scott talk about, the Mohegan Sun went to Tonka came back. I've never heard a pop like I did when Goldberg speared the Rock. I would say it was the third ever that I knew of behind Steiner, debut, and Mick's win. After the cameras went off, the Rock stayed out for at least 20 minutes and had us rolling, kept yelling and telling us not to cheer because he was the bad guy. Thanks, and keep up the great work, Mike Cook. So thank you, Michael, for writing
thanks,
in.
Thanks, Mike.
Appreciate that.
Very nice. Yep.
Always fun to hear from our fans. So, Scott, we are done here. Fun little show for Backlash. We'll be back on Wednesday. Kevin Kelly in the house. We're going to wrap up his run. It's been a good time. Who would have thought?
Can't believe it.
That first time we had him on, he thought I was some weird Twitter stalker, and then I had to have John Walters vouch for me. We had him on to talk about the Pillman gun incident, and who would have thought what it would have spawned, Scott? I mean, like, countless installments of him attending our show here, and then the creation of his own podcast that I'm with, part of, you know, I joined up and help him with, and becoming really good friends, something I never thought watching that episode of Raw from 1996 back in the day, and I never thought I'd be able to call Kevin Kelly a friend, which is mind-blowing to me. So really cool stuff. So we're going to wrap up his run here. He's going to talk about almost the first half of 2003 through April when he was let go from the company, and we'll get his take on some of the stuff we talked about over the last half month. So we'll be back then. Next Monday, we have another rewatch. We'll let you guys know what it is as we get closer. And the next Wednesday, Main Event, Kevin Kelly. So, Scott, anything left you got to say? Or are we done?
No, I was, again, it's always good to have you, to be with you. And the show was blasé. Thank you, Mike. And, yeah, we'll look forward to being with Kevin on Wednesday. Who'd have thunk it?
I know, right? It's you know? Of an error. Yeah. All right, that's Scott. I'm Justin Rowell. Talk to you Wednesday night with KK.
Now I feel like some Orange Julius.
Plenty of time to hit Lane Bryant in the meantime. I get that cashmere sweater over there, Chris Golo, but I prefer that cardigan. And Papa Water shot him if he knew what he'd done. Jim thieves, tramps, and thieves. We hear it from the people of the town. They call us Jim thieves, tramps, and thieves. But every night all the men would come around and lay their money down. I never had schooling, but it taught me well with his smooth southern. Money down.